Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. I don't like so totally null today. This is great. I mean, you know, it's either I have an interview with somebody, you know, huge and famous, and I'm totally stressed, or, well, not totally stressed, I'm getting better at it, or I'm just like completely just, you know, like cruising. Today I'm completely cruising because I got friends. I got Brianna who just called, literally just called in. I got Josie in the second hour, and in the third hour I'm going to talk about airplanes and why the skies are not safe like they used to be. In fact, there's a lot of things that are not like it used to be. In fact, that's kind of a theme I want to ask Brianna about. First of all, I want to find out what's on her mind. But secondly, you know, I'm thinking to myself, especially for younger folks, the world we're living in is not normal. Now, this is not a normal situation. We have political correctness. We have groups defining their own pronouns. We have all kinds of absurd things being taught in schools. We have a left that's gone completely nuts. They're jabbing everybody with a dangerous substance. They're you know, spilling out these bogus theories like climate change, and they're trying to run everybody's life. You know, and the world would be better if we just had no left. It just would. I mean, just, you know, let's re-educate all these people like they want to re-educate us and just say, no, stop being so stupid. Stop ruining the rest of our lives. I mean, there's no problem. There's really no – in fact, let me ask Brianna right now. She's not even on the air yet, but let me ask her right now, you know, is there any problem that wouldn't be made better if the left had no political power at all? If they just talked to themselves, mumbled uncontrollably, you know, yelled and screamed and babbled and just, you know, had their own little groups and they just shut up for the rest of us. But wouldn't that be, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm not going to get rid of any constitutional rights. I'm not going to do anything that, you know, limits these folks, but we'd just be a happier place. It just would. If we didn't have a left, we'd all be much happier and they could just, like I say, you know, argue amongst themselves and leave the rest of us alone. But it never seems to quite work out that way. All right, let me look for Brianna's thing and then we'll get her on here. I still, you know, I'm always mentally a little bit behind. Ah, there we go. She started as a guest on Action Radio, courtesy of our Constitution reporter, Amber Kemper. Both Brianna and Amber are graduates of Patriot Academy, a place where young folks get to practice writing and advocating legislation and being legislators in a mock session. Brianna immediately impressed all of us as someone we wanted on the show with her own report. With an insightful mind, asking and taking on complex questions, and a growing skill in sarcasm and satire, plus her study of government, history, the Constitution, and our founding, all of her skills and knowledge combine into something pretty incredible here on Action Radio. And now, the Government Inquiry Report with Brianna Cannon. So how you doing this week? What's you thinking? What's on your mind? What has occurred to you to ask me about or to inquire into?
So there's a couple of different things for today. The first one, it's about Wyoming. It was actually from last week whenever I heard about it. So a lot more people probably know about it at this point. But it's in Wyoming. They're starting to ban the sales of electric vehicles by 2035.
They're banning electric vehicles?
Yeah, by 2035.
Oh, that's hysterical. Okay, tell me more. You've got my interest.
They're doing it to ensure the stability of its oil and gas industry. And basically, like throughout it, what they're saying is, you know, they don't have the infrastructure or enough to carry all of the charging stations and stuff. And also their economy is really dependent upon the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. So they're going back to, you know, using natural gas instead of electric vehicles.
You mean organic fuels, as we call them. I don't use the word fossil anymore because we obviously know you're not drilling bones. Okay, we're not getting our oil from old dinosaur bones. All right, let's get that straight. So we should start using the term fossil. Okay, so how does that strike you? Pros and cons, what do you think?
I really am not sure of the cons.
Okay, well, give me the pros. I'll start there.
Well, because it's slowly getting rid of the electric vehicles in a state, because right now there's a big globalizing push for everybody mm-hmm. to get an electric vehicle. And, you know, that's a very controlling state to have an American in.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes away, like, a lot of their future freedoms that they're going to have mm-hmm. with a lot of risk and liabilities.
Yeah. What if people want electric cars, though?
They can get them, but I guess not in Wyoming.
Well, let's replace cars with guns. A state that says you can't buy guns in our state anymore. You know, for the public safety, for the public good, and to help our state out, because we make whatever. Pick a state, California, and we have tourism, and they just had a assassination by this very deranged person. And Gavin Newsom's all screaming and yelling, well, we've got to stop guns. Now, he's saying we're not going to confiscate them all. But what if they took that radical step, so we're no longer going to produce them, no longer going to sell them? You can't buy guns in California anymore. What's the difference?
Well, with the guns and stuff, that's a direct violation of the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a little bit more obvious. And, you know, mm-hmm. buying a car and, like, whichever car that you want, you know, I feel like that also would be a freedom. And, you know, there's part of it where it's, like, I guess, a sale being regulated by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, throughout time there's been a lot of those. So I'm not really completely sure on that part where that falls and whether it's right or wrong. I mean, part of it, you know, you don't want the government in it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really know all the boundaries that the state government has, or I don't know all the boundaries the state government has either.
Well, states have police powers. States, you know, basically the states can do whatever is not prohibited by the state constitution or prohibited by, you know, the Bill of Rights and things like that in the federal constitution. So the 14th Amendment says that the federal constitution will extend to the states, because citizens of the United States are also citizens of the state in which they live, and they're entitled to privileges and immunities of citizenship and equal protection of the laws. And since the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, the Bill of Rights extends to the states. The parts in the Constitution that extend to the federal government, you know, are limiting on the federal government. The Bill of Rights is almost like its own constitution. You know, because it's limiting government by what they cannot do to your rights. So the question is two questions here, and I'm leading to something. As soon as you mentioned this, I thought, okay, I know where I want to go with this. So the question is on free. Well, let's talk about the first one I was thinking of. Do we have a right to travel?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, not the freedom to do so. It's not like a directly stated right, but I mean, we have the freedom to do so.
Okay. So the Ninth Amendment says that rights, you know, not specifically enumerated in the Constitution cannot be denied to the people. So just because the Constitution doesn't specifically – so the Bill of Rights, the whole purpose of the Bill of Rights is to specifically limit government. It's not to limit your rights. It's not to say that these are the only rights you're going to have. But it's these are the ones that they have picked to specifically limit government from touching at all. So the Ninth Amendment says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So do the people retain a right to travel? In other words, in a free society, here's where we get to the rhetorical part of the question. In a free society, can you call it a free society if we're not free to travel?
No.
Okay. So here's the next one in my lawyerly trial court fashion. If we are free to travel, are we not free to determine the method of travel?
Yes, but there is actually a lot of laws on the methods of travel and where
okay.
you can use what and what you can drive and things like that.
Okay, what comes to mind?
Like I know in a lot of places you can't drive like four-wheelers, just like... Mm-hmm. On your normal road or anything.
Right. But it's not a restriction on four-wheelers completely. They're not banning four-wheelers. They're just saying that you can't do that. I mean, speed limits limit people all the time because of the way the roads are engineered. You know, there's a speed limit on a major interstate four-lane highway that's different than, you know, your little neighborhood street. Doesn't mean you can't drive. It just means you can't drive at certain speeds in certain places. So that makes sense. So, and those are well within the police powers of the state, but they don't, but four-wheelers, for example, aren't banned. They're just places where they can do it. Same thing with guns. You know, you can go shoot them anywhere you want. We got target ranges, you know, where, you know, and we got competitions and we got hunting, we got things like that. You know, we even have self-defense, but we don't have open, you can't just walk down the street and go, hmm, I never did like that sign. You know, boom. Okay. So what I'm getting at is what, you know, is what they said is like this reasonable test. What's reasonable? And also, I'm really getting to consistency. So if you believe in freedom, there may be things that sort of, you know, get in the way of convenience for your beliefs and your ideas. So electric car, I don't like electric cars mostly because, well, let me ask you this. Let me put it another way. I always try to get as much of an open-ended question as possible. Is it the electric car that's the problem or the government policies around electric cars that are the problem?
Yeah, well, I mean, the government policies, I mean, there's the one aspect that, I mean, you're talking about now about, like, you know, the rights for people to drive what they want. And mm-hmm. the reason that the state is doing it is because, you know, they want to preserve their industry and their economy because they feel like the infrastructure is weak and, you know, it'll really hurt them. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, a state government has to look at. So I think there's, like, many different sides to what a state's decision is. And I think that is a fuzzy line where they're working with of, you know, are they taking freedom away mm-hmm. while trying to fix the economy? Is there too big of a push, like too much of a, what's the word I'm looking for?
I'm not sure. Certainly it's over-regulation or over-control. Yeah. You know, in other words, the question really is, does the state have the right to deny an industry or deny a product just because they're trying to promote their own industry? So the question becomes, you know, what if say, for example, let's pick a southern state that grows cotton, all right? Do they have the right to mandate
drugs are banned, you know, because they're bad for people and stuff. Uh-huh. And so, you know, states will ban the use of them. You know, uh-huh. it's still banning something.
Good point. No, I mean, this is why I want to wrestle with this because, you know, that's a valid point. So certain drugs are illegal. Some drugs are non-prescription. Some drugs are prescription and some drugs are just simply banned. You know, you can buy aspirin over the counter, as they say, you know, various, anything with a long name is probably by prescription, you know, and heroin is banned, you know, heroin's illegal. So you've got these different gradations of that. Or fentanyl especially, you know, that's the newest one. That's the most dangerous, is illegal. And yet, you know, it's in the country, but that's another story. So the question is, are electric cars by their nature, and it doesn't mean that they have to be perfectly safe because nothing's perfectly safe, especially when abused by the person with it. You know, guns can be perfectly safe if you just leave them in the gun safe and never touch them. They're not going to do anything, you know, but it's only by the user that you have a problem. Cars, same thing. You leave your car in the garage, it's perfectly safe. You know, nothing's going to happen. But that's not the point of a car. The point of a car is to drive it. So unless you use it, you know, you defeat the purpose of having one. So given that there's inherent risk in literally everything in being alive, what is reasonable for a state to do in the promotion of its own industry? You know, does Alaska, for example, ban, you know, electricity because they want to sell more oil? So this is an interesting question. This is why I'm glad you brought it up. So, again, is it the policy of electric cars that's bad or the electric cars themselves? Is there something inherently dangerous about an electric car?
I mean, the electric car itself, like just being an electric car, you know, mm-hmm. it literally can't pose a threat. But it's how, you know, the electric cars are used and what they do and how they work and stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, because they exist, they are used by humans and they are controlled by humans. So, I mean, that's what makes them dangerous and risky and to rely on and have. And, I mean, that doesn't – I mean, I don't think that should mean that, you know, somebody just isn't allowed to have one. But, mm-hmm. it, like, of course, there is risks and stuff and factors to it. But like you said, you know, life comes with risks.
Yeah. Yeah, so I know electric cars, for example, in the hurricane, after Hurricane Ian, when the streets were flooded with salt water being incredibly conductive of electricity, these cars were blowing up. and catching fire. The batteries are a problem. What you do with the batteries after they've used up the useful life is a problem. The way that the lithium and the cobalt is mined is horrible. And we've got slave labor. You know,
yeah, one
of
the things that they laid out is, you know, they're aware of the waste that can't be recycled from used electric vehicles.
Right. Do you have the bill in front of you by chance? Does it, or do you have a summary, or what exactly does it say? I'm curious.
I read it a couple of days ago, but I don't have it up anymore. But I do have just a normal article on it.
Okay. Is the article for it or against it? Or are they wishy-washy?
I don't know. The only, like, things I've seen that might lean is, like, quotations from the government. But, I mean, I honestly don't know. I think it's...
Okay. Well, who's opposing it?
I mean, that's a pretty good sign, though, you know, when you can't really tell. But.
Well, no, I don't know, because I don't believe in – there's no such thing as objective journalism. Everybody takes a position. I just wish they'd be honest about it. This is why, you know, I say not only are we not objective journalists, we're not even journalists here. We're advocates. Let's be straight. We're advocates of freedom. And so everything comes from that perspective. But once we say that, though, we don't have – everybody knows there's no pretense of objectivity on Action Radio. You know, we are advocates for freedom. We write bills for freedom. You know, so for something like this, I'll give you my perspective. I think it's wrong because I would not deny anybody the option of having an electric vehicle, even though me personally, I don't want one. You know, but I'm sure they're, especially for local driving, actually they're not a bad idea, except that there are problems. My problem with electric vehicles are the government subsidies, the mandates, the push to have them, this drive for mono power. You know, and I call it mono power. So in other words, if the only source of energy is electricity, I mean, I like energy diversity. There's a term you can throw that out sometime. You know, gas, oil, electric, nuclear. I mean, all the geothermal, you know, all the different sources we can. If you want to stick a windmill on your rooftop, go for it. You know, if you have solar panels that heat your house and you're living in Phoenix, Arizona, it's sunny, you know, 290 days per year. Great. That's a great, you should have the freedom to do that. I would never take that away from people. What I object to is the force and the subsidies. So what they're really doing is they're trying to counter the subsidies of electric power industry, of the government regulation. They're trying to counter the fact that once the government has mono power, because energy, electricity is all government control. It's all government metered, government regulated. It goes through your smart meter. So the government can ration. They have these things in California called rolling blackouts, rolling brownouts, where they systematically turn off power in certain areas for 2 or 3 hours, you know, to sort of balance that. And rather than make more power, they just cut it off. So this is why electricity is such a dangerous thing if it's the only source of power. People should be able to go to, okay, fine, you're going to cut off my electricity? Great, I'm going to turn on the windmill. Screw you. You know, I mean, there are ways to handle this. And so I think the problem is the subsidy.
Yeah.
Now what? So here's a question for you. If Wyoming, rather than banning electric cars, say doubled the tax and added a – this is what I want to do. And this is why hopefully Amber actually came up with the idea, Amber Kemper. We got to find her. She's our missing constitutional reporter. But she had an idea for an electric car tax, and I added to it a hazmat penalty. So in other words, a $25,000 fee per electric car to dispose of the battery. You know, plus you take the government subsidy.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Or heard about our bill or what? What have you heard? Do tell.
I don't know. It might have been you guys. It might have been somewhere else. I honestly don't know. But I've heard of that before. You know, putting in
it.
A tax for. Yeah, I was like, it was probably you guys.
Well, I might not have been the only person that had that idea. You know, I'm the only one I've heard talk about it, but it doesn't mean that. See, this is the nice thing about what I consider good ideas. There's a lot, they're out there in a lot of different places. And so a lot of things that I'll think of, other people think of too. I just, you know, I like to be up there amongst the first ones. But if we could put a hazardous materials, put a hazmat fee on the purchase of an electric car and on the new battery, the battery replacement too, it would be the same $25,000 plus the cost of the battery. If you did that, if you took, I don't know what the government subsidy for electric cars is, the federal subsidy, let's just say it's $10,000. So if Wyoming, you know, then put a $10,000 state tax on buying an electric car, that would neutralize the federal subsidy. Then you'd have, you know, market equity, if I can make up yet another term today. Or if Wyoming really wanted to have fun, if Wyoming wanted to have even more fun, they'd double the tax and say, wait a minute, you know, for all those electric cars that are already out there subsidized, you know, we're only going to double the tax, but each year when you register your electric car, we're going to put a $10,000 tax and take the federal tax subsidy away from you. That's okay. They can make it difficult to own, and then people can make a choice. They can say, well, screw this, I'm getting out of Wyoming. Or they can say, okay, I really love my electric car. Now, what's unique about Wyoming is the cold. So do you know what cold does to batteries?
Not particularly.
Destroys them. They drain really fast. Oh, yeah. So if you're in Wyoming, the question then becomes, how useful is an electric car? I would say, you know, maybe 6 months of the year, it's good. 6 months of the year, it should sit in your garage and you can drive your diesel or your gasoline pickup truck, you know, out in the range. So some interesting questions here.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, and you know, whenever you ban something, I mean, it always puts a there's a word for it, but not a level, like a point where, you know, other people try and go off of. Like, I mean, like when bills are passed or things in the Supreme Court, you always see people making comparisons of the other Supreme Court cases. Like this Supreme Court case, because of these two Supreme cases before it, led the way for this. You know, a precedent, that's what the word I was looking for. It kind of sets a precedent for, you know, future things in other states. And so, you know, to ban a vehicle of any kind of thing from like the government banning the use of a vehicle or the buying of a vehicle, whichever it is, you know, it does, you know, it is a little bit wary. Because, you know, that opens up a door for the government to ban much more.
Well, that's the main point. And you know, I think that's the most important thing is consistency. You know, if you believe in freedom, you have to believe in freedom for things that you don't want. You know, because the principle of freedom is more important. It's like cigarettes. I can't stand cigarettes. My parents smoked when I was a kid. I always hated it. You know, after dinner, they'd bring out the cigarettes and I'd leave the room. See ya, bye. You know, because I couldn't stand it. But would I ban cigarettes? No. I just don't want them around me. And fortunately, we live in a world now where in public areas, it's restrictive because cigarette smoke does not stay with the person smoking. If they would just breathe it in, it would stay there. I wouldn't care, but it doesn't. It goes everywhere. You know, but I wouldn't ban it, even though I don't like it. Go ahead.
I heard something short about it, and I don't have anything information on it. I just, like, heard this yesterday. It was a little short thing, so I don't have any context for this. But it was somewhere in Europe, and I want to say it's the UK, but they were talking about, you know, they're, like, going to be, like, phasing out to basically make smoking illegal, non-existent, but in, like, a sneaky way, where basically, I don't know how exactly they did it. I assume that maybe it's by, like, a birth year, like, right now, like, for example, like, if they said, like, right now anybody born after, like, 2002, you know, or before or after 2002 can no longer, you know, buy cigarettes or smoke cigarettes or whatever. You know, everybody's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's, like, an age, like, let's say, like, there's a certain age that they have for it. These are just, like, crazy ideas of maybe a way that they're doing it because, again, I haven't really looked into it.
Where's this happening?
Somewhere in Europe, and I think it's the UK, but I could be wrong. And so basically, like, what the person was saying is whenever the people that are smoking now are 67 years old, nobody younger than 67 years old can smoke or buy cigarettes.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, I mean, but I went to Europe, and, you know, when I went there in the 80s, and too many people smoked. I remember coming out of some of the bars. Oh, it was incredible. I mean, I smelled the smoke for like a week. You know, so you couldn't get rid of it. Because European smoke, Asian country smoke. You know, especially, you know, like I say, even you go to San Francisco and like Chinatown, there's a lot of smoking. You know, people smoke. The different cultures, different countries smoke a whole lot. I don't know situation in South America or Africa, but I know in Europe and Asia, they smoke much more than Americans. Americans, for the most part, have gotten rid of smoking, certainly in public areas. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's like a dirty habit. Someone smokes, they don't want to admit it anymore. And it used to be all over the movies. You know, you watch the movies and everybody smoked. Humphrey Bogart, I don't think, ever appeared in a scene without a cigarette. And ultimately, it killed him. But you look at, there was a certain point where, you know, less and less frequently cigarettes would appear. It's quite interesting. So, but the question of banning a product, I don't believe in banning products. Now, could Wyoming tax it, make it more expensive? Could they do all kinds of things? Could they have a separate registration fee for an electric car? There's a whole bunch of things they can do without banning it, but you're still restricting a product. And I think the most important thing is to restrict the federal policies. So all the benefits and all the policies the federal government is pushing towards electric cars should be reversed, counter, or maybe even increased against the federal government, but not necessarily against the people. So what would you think of, and I got Pianki line, I'm bring him on in a second here, but what would you think of Wyoming instead of taxing their own citizens more for electric cars, saying to the federal government, we don't like your $10,000 subsidy of electric cars. So every time someone buys an electric car in Wyoming, we're going to withhold $10,000 from the money that we would have paid you. How would that be for a solution?
Seems like a good solution.
Okay.
I mean, right offhand, but I mean, I don't know a whole lot about it, but you know.
That's okay.
Nobody I think
does.
It's a better way to go about it than banning.
Yeah. And see, you don't have to have the right answer here, because a lot of times we don't know the right answer. We're just speculating. We're just trying out different ideas. But I really think that you have to be consistent in your freedom, and part of that means that when people have products that you don't like vaping. And vaping is horrible. You chimneys of stuff going, and I know it's not safe, but I wouldn't ban it. See, freedom implies a right to be stupid, to be quite blunt. You can be stupid. You can bungee jump. Do I think that's stupid? Yeah, I sure do. I'm not going to go bungee jump, all right? I wouldn't stop people from doing it, So let me ask you that question. I'll bring up Priyanki. Do you have a right to be stupid?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, because that's basically like a right to life, because how would you even go about making that illegal or preventing that from happening? I mean, the only thing, the only thing that I can think of is, murder is the only way to get rid of that, because that you can't do it any other way. I don't even know how you would get rid of that. But
which one? Electric cars or bungee jumping?
Being stupid.
You can't. Well, and that's the thing. You have freedom to do things that are dangerous. I mean, smoking cigarettes, I wouldn't make it illegal, but it's stupid. It's going to cut your life short. Nothing good comes from smoking.
Yeah.
There are people that drive drunk, and that is illegal. But it's really stupid. Most of our laws are to prevent dangerous stupidity, not of the person, but of them hurting somebody else. If someone drives fast in a car and wraps himself around a tree, yes, that's a problem. It's a problem for them because if it kills them, it's a problem for their family because they lose somebody. And it's a problem. It's a big problem. But the fact that other people aren't hurt by it makes a big difference. So if someone runs down the street drunk and kills a bunch of other people, the crime is much more severe. Vehicular manslaughter and things like that, or even killing one other person. So most of our laws are really geared not to prevent complete stupidity, but to prevent people from injuring others. You look at the, and Pianki knows about this too, the federal aviation regulations. I'll talk about this more, in terms of airlines. But the federal aviation regulations are to prevent damage and injury to persons and property on the ground first. Then they're designed to protect injury, to your passengers second. Okay, the last person is the pilot, the last person the FAA is concerned with. And that's how the regulations are written. So can pilots be stupid and do stupid things? Well, they're not supposed to, but they do, But there are regulations against that. But the regulations really are designed to protect other people because they can't protect themselves because they don't know the regulations. They're not there in the airplane. Yeah. Let me answer Pianki on this. Let's just find out if people have a right to be stupid and what he thinks about electric cars. Pianki, what do you think of all this?
Well, people have been building electric cars since I've known, a hobby, a high effort. But I like what Wyoming was considering to do.
Okay, why?
They're a country, and they can put what they think is best for the best welfare for their citizens. There are the countries in Africa that have banned bleaching cream. Well, people can't put bleaching cream on their skin to make it lighter. And that's that country's right to do that.
Okay, well,
I would like to see more countries/states push back against the federal government and say, we're not going to do it. And like you said, you know, that was a time when they had subsidies for solar panels on your home.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what they called it. But it didn't work.
Well, what if Wyoming subsidized gasoline cars? Or what if they took away the sales tax on gasoline cars? That'd be a great way to counter it. So you can buy a gasoline or a diesel vehicle, and there's no sales tax on it. That would be a proactive way to make electric cars less desirable to people. I don't think they have to ban them. But I want to talk to Brianna about something that we've talked about on the show here, Bianchi and I, the concept the states are really countries. Think of them as independent nations. You know, it's unfortunate that we can't call ourselves the United Nations because that name's already taken and it has bad connotations. But if you think of the states as their own independent nations that have like so the federal government would be kind of like the European Union government, a bunch of stuffy bureaucrats trying to dictate things, but they only have certain power. Maybe that's not a good example. I think the European Union maybe does have power over the independent countries. That's why Britain, you know, seceded from them. But if you think of the federal government as just an entity basically hired by the states to do certain things that the states couldn't do for themselves, what do you think of the idea, the concept? If you think of states as independent nations, does that change your view, Brianna?
I mean, whenever you describe it more in detail, it makes a little bit more sense, federal government, like, hired to help do what they can't do. But also, like, whenever, like, you just hear, like, independent nations, it can kind of, like, trick your mind into thinking that they are just completely different and distinct and, you know, just 100%, you know, independent from the other states. And, you know, in reality, one of the reasons that we're such a great country is, you know, a lot of the states, you know, work together within the country in itself, because it's one country with a bunch of different states. And even those states do have their independence and their own rights to run their states, you know, they are all still connected and united. And I think that's one of the main reasons they've become such a powerhouse, isn't it? Because, you know, we have a bunch of countries all together, but it's like one big country that's united together.
What unites us? What do you think? What sort of kind of holds us together, even though the states are independent?
You know, part of it, I think it might be the fact that we do also have a central government where we all are tied together in some way.
Does the government tie us together or something else? Here's a rhetorical question warning. I should just give that up. What really ties us together?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of factors, like, within the economy as well, but, I mean, we also trade with other countries, too.
How about our culture? How about being an American, the ideals, the ideas, the principles?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's kind of what I was getting to. So, in other words, we can have independent nations called states within our country that are as different can be. Wyoming is different than Florida, which is different than from California, which is different from Vermont. You know, you go around this country, and I've traveled most of it. I've been to most of the states. I think there's maybe 4 or 5 I have not been to. This country is radically different, but that's our strength. You know, you want to talk about diversity as our strength? We really are diverse. Trust me, California, Vermont have a lot more in common. I think a better example, New Hampshire. But the point is that we have regions, we have different states, we have all kinds of things. But the one thing that ties us together, except for the left. Left is like the exception because they hate this country. But those of us who love this country, what ties us together is the feeling of being American. And I can be just as American being born in Canada, you know, having come to this country and sworn my allegiance to this country and been the naturalized American as somebody born here. A lot of cases, immigrants are even more American. But we can still have our independent states.
Yeah,
Well, thank you. So if we have the principles, you know, especially make America great again, you know, if you're the principles, we want our country to be great again. What makes our country great is freedom. So the more freedom we have, the greater we are as a country. Then we can have the independence because that comes within freedom. There's an independence. That freedom implies independence. So if someone wants to be different, great. If you have a product you don't like, fine. You know, but the question is, where does the limit on that come from? So what would be a reasonable thing for the state to do? Should they be proactive and take away the sales tax on gasoline-powered vehicles, or should they say that you can't buy an electric vehicle? I think there's better ways to do it. What do you think?
I agree. There's better ways to go about it.
Okay. Do you have any other ways they could do it? If you want to discourage electric vehicles and promote gasoline vehicles or even steam-powered vehicles. Let's bring out a Stanley steamer. you know, how would you do that and still maintain freedom?
I mean, you could say regulate, but obviously you don't want a lot of government regulation.
Well, is regulation freedom?
And regulates everything.
Is a regulation based on freedom,
what?
Or is it based on, are regulations based on freedom or control? It's a great point you just brought up.
Well, in this case, it would be control, and that's why it would be dangerous to do that.
Okay.
I mean, the taxes, that's something that's, you know, within their power range that really could make an impact on it.
Mm-hmm. So what would you do with the tax code as far as these vehicles go?
I mean, your idea sounds good.
Okay, but I want your idea. That's the fun of it. This is your report. I'm just here causing trouble, as usual. Okay. Well,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, the other thing they could do is promote their own oil industry more. You know, take away the tax on that. I'll tell you another thing, and this is something I'll get Pianki on this one too, is that we did a 2-hour show with Roger Roots, who's an attorney. He was with the Fully Informed Jurors Association for a while. We spent 2 hours talking about all that Western land that the federal government thinks they own, and they really don't. That's state land. Federal government is prohibiting from owning land in other states unless the state legislature specifically gives it to them, unless it's under a military base or under certain dockyards or border facilities. Or in D.C. That's it. So if Wyoming really wants to do something, they should take their federal land back and open that up to oil, state oil and gas exploration. Pianki, what do you think about that? I know what he's going to say. I'll get back to Brianna.
Yes, that I agree with that also. There's nothing the Constitution says that the federal government should own land other than what it stipulates, like mm-hmm. Fort, like F Troop back during the Southern and the West.
You better explain F Troop to Brianna. This is before your time, I think. Are you familiar? Have you seen the reruns?
Of what? Example.
Of F Troop? It was an old situation comedy. They had this comic cavalry and this comic Indian troop. You could never show it today. Just because it'd be, some of it would scream political correctness, prejudice, making fun of indigenous people, who knows what, but you couldn't do it today. Oh, here's the clause I was looking for. This is Article 1, Section 8, which is the delegated powers to Congress by the states to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over the district, that would be the District of Columbia, not to exceed 10 miles square, as may by session of a particular state. So if secession is a state going away, I guess session would be the joining of states. I never even seen that word. I missed that. Anyway, is an exception to Congress. Oh, here we go. And to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. So those are the only things the federal government can do. They can ask the state for land to have forts, in other words, military bases, magazines, in other words, storehouses of ammunition, arsenals would be like guns, dockyards, well, that's, you know, lakes, rivers, anything with water, and other needful buildings, which is kind of open. That's it. It's the only thing that the federal government can own, and then only with the consent of the state legislatures. So all that land that's federal land out west is not federal land. It's actually state land. They're just not claiming it. Idiots, morons, fools. If I may be that blunt. Oklahoma, you got federal land in Oklahoma?
I think you've asked me this before. I know I still have not looked into it.
Okay, well, I'll ask you again, and then you can not look into it again. We got 20 minutes left. What do you want to talk about? Where should we go next? What else you got?
Because
I have topics if
well,
you don't, but
I just
want to get you first. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I do. I just got a pick.
Okay. Well,
so
may I introduce this? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, so for any of you listeners who are between the ages of 16 and 25, Patriot Academy has opened up their applications. So you can go in and apply different, like, they have an early bird special, which is cheaper, but that ends on the 31st. So you might not pay it by then. but you can pay like the normal price after that. It's a leadership congress boot camp, and it's in the most realistic mock legislative session in America. I mean, you'll learn, of course, leadership skills in biblical facts and historical information, and you learn a lot of the Constitution and those biblical and constitutional principles, and you interact with a bunch of people that are like-minded. And one of the biggest things there is you learn character, and you shape and you form your character. And you don't even have to really be involved in politics or anything to enjoy it. It's a really amazing experience, so you all should go and apply for that.
Ooh, what a shameless plug. And she didn't even ask me. I'm just teasing you.
A what?
I said, what a shameless plug, and you didn't even ask me. That's okay. No, I'm teasing you. This would be a really good time to get Patriot Academy on the show. I want to do that anyway,
yes.
Just because I'm curious about it. But the other reason is, you know, all you wonderful graduates, you know, you're a graduate of Patriot Academy. What all the stuff you know? I love it. So what I'm hoping to do is to take graduates from all over the country and see who might be interested in being lobbyists. You know, now that you all have this great knowledge of the Constitution and citizenship and, you know, how the legislative process works, you know, you folks are the perfect ones to actually start going to the state legislatures and the Congress, you know, and the local governments, the school boards, the city councils, county commissions, things like that, and say, hey, this is what we want, you know. And so now's the time to do it because, you know, you guys get the future, you know, which leads to something I was going to talk about, the national debt, with you in just a bit. But do you think we could get a hold of folks? When's the Patriot Academy start? When's the next one? You said the 31st or after the 31st?
End of July.
Oh, it's end of July. They're recruiting now? It's a little advance warning. Okay.
Yes.
Oh. Huh. Well, you could also ask them if they want to sponsor Action Radio, too, considering we have a mission for them afterwards, and I would be happy to play commercials for them. I'm serious. You know, I make all kinds of stuff here.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Let's get them on. Let's see if they
I'll propose that
want to help us
too.
Out. Yeah. Okay. I want to make an announcement, too. We have an incredible guest coming on Thursday. Now, last week, we had Dr. Peter McCullough, which was an amazing hour. And now he loves our vaccine product liability legislation, loves our – I just introduced him to our big tech, you know, elimination of censorship bill. And so we're going to hear from Josie in about 17, 18 minutes. She was there with Dr. McCullough in Tennessee at one of the Reawaken America tours. It's another great thing. Still waiting for my invitation so I can teach legislative workshops. It hasn't happened yet, but, you know, I'm hopeful. But Thursday we got Christina Bobb. And Christina Bobb, you go ahead, laugh. I shouldn't cut off laughter. Sorry, my mistake. But Thursday we got Christina Bobb, and she is Trump's attorney, one of them on election integrity. And we just completed Diane Warner, who's going to talk about this tomorrow, is her election integrity bill. And it's for Florida, but it could apply to any state. You just have to plug in your state code, chapter, verse, you know, that kind of stuff. So she's going to be fascinating. And she, you know, I want to talk to her about working with the Trump campaign and introducing our citizen legislation. So there's some pretty incredible things happening here. So there's my shameless plug for us. Back to you, Brianna.
And I think that would be a really good idea to do that. And I sent them one email, one or two, but I think it's time to send another one.
I think we need to call at least,
Patriot,
you know,
Academy.
I think I both need, I'll look them up and give them a phone call too. If you want to call them, feel free. And you can say, as an Action Radio reporter doing the government inquiry report, you can use that now. Put it on your resume. You know, you're a fully fledged reporter. I mean, you're doing real reporting work. And so you might as well give yourself credit for it. And I don't mind you representing Action Radio. Sound good?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Try my best not to damage your name.
Oh, come on. I'm not worried about it. If I was worried about you, I wouldn't tell you to do it. You know, listen, yeah, I have tremendous faith in you. You know, I'm proud to have you on the show, and I love our conversations. You know, I think this is fabulous. Let me, do you have another topic? Because I have one I want to kind of raise with you. But you first.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Okay. The debt ceiling. There is this incredible lie about the debt that we, you know, I looked up to this morning. I only found one article. Fortunately, it's from the Wall Street Journal. I'm going to do that probably Friday when Derek, our financial person, is on. But I only found one article that says cut spending. Everything else is like, we have to raise the debt ceiling or else. And it's this big lie. because you know they say, well, we have to pay our obligations. Well, why would Congress make obligations knowing that they had to raise the debt ceiling to honor those obligations? That to me is economic treason and economic suicide. So the whole thing is spending cuts, but the reason it affects you so much is guess who's going to have to deal with the now almost $32 trillion deficit, you know, I think $7 trillion of which just in the last few years since COVID. Not to put something on your shoulders, but it's there anyway.
Thanks.
Sorry. So my question is, or my idea for you, I was just, you know, noodling on my computer earlier. I think that if you and Patriot Academy and Young Folks started a campaign of pay your debt, tell Congress, pay your debt. It's not our debt. They're the ones that did it. You could actually start organizing a pay your debt campaign. You know, start with everybody you know at Patriot Academy, get the email list, you know, talk to the folks at Rick Green, I guess is right. Talk to them and start a movement. And then contact Charlie Kirk at Turning Point. And get the college students involved and say, wait a minute, let's start a pay your debt campaign. You could be the chairperson. You can run it. I'll give you an idea. What do you think?
It sounds good. So, like, if that were to happen, what would be some of the main things that we would want to push them to do in order to do that?
What a great idea. What a great question. Let me put it back to you, which I tend to do, and then I'll get Pianchi's opinion on this as well. If you wanted to pay down the national debt of $32 trillion, what would you tell Congress to do? Just try anything. Wild ideas, whatever comes to mind.
Well, I guess in summary, you call it cut reckless spending, like billions and billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine. Trillions, actually.
Not to Ukraine. Accurate. Trillions in wasteful spending, but I think it's only like $150 billion to Ukraine, and then plus weapon shipments, plus everything else. So Ukraine's a huge drain. Okay, so let's include all foreign stupid wars that we have no business in. You know, and I would go back to Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Ukraine. Those cost trillions of dollars when you take the total cost of those wars. So get your pen or computer. Let's make a little list here of things that would go into this. So the first one is stop stupid foreign war spending. What else would you do?
Yeah, but like, but that doesn't mean to like, you know, stop it at all, because, you know, you do need to have that national defense. But
of course, I'm not saying stop the military.
Particularly the word
the stupid. Spending. Stop the stupid spending.
The stupid.
Okay. The permanent war class, like, the military-industrial complex, the things like the F-35, which is the most expensive weapon system in history, and it really doesn't work. It doesn't work mainly because stealth doesn't work. That's a joke, too. I'll explain that one to you someday. What else you got? Do you want Social Security?
Yeah.
Or do you want to have an independent retirement system?
I think Social Security should be optional.
Bullet point number two.
And so I don't believe that it has to be, you know, completely one way or completely the other. I think because a lot of people do want Social Security. So I think that could still be available, but I just don't think everybody should be forced into it.
Okay.
So I think
that's a viable option. No, that's a good option.
Yeah.
Anything else? I'm throwing this at you without even thinking about it. So we can take this up next week too. But anything else come to mind? And I'll see what Pianchi's got on his mind.
Yeah, a couple of things. The first one would be some things in the omnibus bill, but I'll come back to that. Also, a lot of like welfare programs and stuff, and a lot of people aren't going to like this because, you know, they like to not work or contribute to the economy and just take our money. But I'm cutting costs in the welfare programs. And, you know, honestly, in one way, you know, abolish it. And if you want to do something to help people, reframe it to be something that can actually help people. Because the system is just so worn down at this point. It's just something that needs to just be completely redone.
Well, let's make it even more blanket.
Cutting a lot of welfare spending.
Okay, well, the federal government is welfare authorized by the Constitution for the federal government to spend money on?
Is it authorized by the Constitution?
No.
Isn't it, since it's directly giving money to help out people, isn't that actually against the Constitution?
That's a good question. I don't know. But there's nothing that says welfare, and people will say, well, the general welfare clause, we're supposed to promote the general welfare. No, that just means what do you think of that? Have you heard that before?
I haven't heard that before.
No, it's a leftist argument. They'll say that. Well, the Constitution says promote the general welfare. Well, that means that all the laws have to apply equally. The laws have to apply generally. That's what it means. It's for the welfare of everybody. Welfare in terms of benefit, not in terms of money. So if the federal government, trust me, you'll hear that. If you haven't heard it yet, you're going to at some point. But abolishing welfare, all federal government subsidies of people. Calvin Coolidge was big on that. He says the government should not be engaged in charity. It's not our business. So look at Calvin Coolidge. He cut the federal budget in half, and he cut the national debt in half. So this might be a place to look for some things too. Pianki, let me get you on this. Yeah. What would you do?
Well, yes, I would cut up a lot of these programs. They would have a sunset. But no, I'm not for getting rid of Social Security. I think that should be the way it is now. And people say that individuals should have their own money. Well, if you're going to use that pretense, take the Social Security pool, which is tremendous in size, and trade it the way you would want individuals to do, because individuals won't do that. Then when they don't do it, then they'll find themselves on the public dole at some point in time, which is be a further burden.
Well, see, that's the problem. If people don't save for retirement or in my case, you know, I had trouble generating enough money to save for retirement. That's why I have no intentions of retiring. A, I'm having too much fun working. B, I don't really have that option just yet. And so, you know, for my circumstance, it's a different situation. But had I had the option to take the money that I did earn, and if it went into a mandatory retirement account, say it took 10% of my income, and I was forced to not have it, and all of a sudden I had a private account with all this money in it, I'd much rather that than Social Security, because I'd have more money.
Yeah, and now in a lot of students, in the actual curriculum, a lot of teachers and classes and stuff teach the importance of, you know, saving up for important things, and especially retirement. Mm-hmm. That you have to start early. And so, I mean, it's not something that you figure out. I mean, it's something that's taught early on too, mm-hmm. To be able to prepare for that.
But we've talked about the lay-in system, which is a mandatory checkoff. So right now they take 15% of your income. So a company pays you money and you receive money from a corporation, but 15% of that, and they can say 7.5% from the employer, 7.5% from the employer. That's a bunch of nonsense. You lose 15% of the money the company could have paid you. That goes to the government for Social Security. So I'm saying you could make more money with the 10%. You actually get 5% of your money, you know, when you earn it, and take 10% out of your paychecks instead of 15%, and put that into an account that you'll get at 62, 65, 67, you know. We'll just pick an age, because it's not government dependent anyway. They're not paying you. It's your own account, as opposed to now where it's not your own account. So when the government talks about cutting Social Security, you know, payments, they're only getting that money from people today to pay right out again. And the so-called trust fund, they have spent that all money. There's nothing in the Social Security Trust Fund except IOUs for previous spending going back to the Johnson administration. So I think you should have a choice. But that'd be a huge way to, and I think Stephen Moore was talking about this recently, 45 is the cutoff. So if you're over 45, you do better just to keep Social Security. If you're under 45, you're going to do better if you put 10% of your money into a private account. When you retire at 65, 20 years later, you know, you're going to have more money than you would have had with Social Security, which is probably going to be cutting down more and more. You know, as more and more people get on it, they're going to raise the retirement age. They're going to cut the benefit because they're going to have to, because there aren't enough younger folks to support it. So there's a good way to do it. Something to think about. Got another idea? What else could we, a major area where we could cut federal spending?
I know in the big omnibus bill that is the most deceitful thing that people are hating right now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of hidden funds of, you know, money going to a bunch of different programs. So, I mean, stopping things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, actually having a set legislative.
You know, you have to audit.
What?
You have to audit a lot of the government, find out where they're spending all their money. That's what they're supposed to do with the appropriations bills. So the way Congress, the law that hasn't been followed since, I think, I don't know, Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, is that they actually had appropriations bills. And there was 12 of them or 13 of them. And they would actually take, you know, areas of the government and they would hold hearings, and they would evaluate how much money should be spent, and they would appropriate that amount of money and say, this is what you get. You know, now, for the last several years, they've done these continuing resolutions where they've kept funding it the same, or they've just increased it by a certain percentage for everybody. Stupid way to budget, but that's what they've been doing. So if we go back to appropriations bills and actually evaluate how much the government costs, that would save a huge amount too. Got another idea? What else can we do?
So we've covered like different cuts.
Mm-hmm. How about taxes? Mm-hmm. If you want to cut the federal deficit,
for
federal budget.
Taxes,
say that again.
I'm always for lowering taxes.
Okay, and what would that do for the national debt?
I know it will increase productivity in the economy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, which means what? You're on the right track. Keep going.
Which means there's more money.
Mm-hmm. You ever hear the Laffer curve?
The what?
Laffer curve, L-A-F-E-R, Professor Arthur Laffer. It was big during the Reagan administration. He's an old dude now. In fact, we even had David Stockman on the show earlier.
I've heard that before, but I don't know what it is.
Basically, it says that the more you lower taxes, the greater the economy grows, the more revenue actually goes to government. It's counterintuitive to Democrats. They can't understand this, that if you lower taxes, it increases the productivity.
Is this the guy that like wrote on the napkin that's in a museum somewhere?
I think you're right. It seems to me that makes sense. But look at the Laffer curve, L-A-F-F-E-R. And so Laffer said that, yeah. In fact, that's what they did in the Reagan administration when they cut taxes so drastically, which was good. I mean, they cut taxes down. The government actually had more money because the growth in the economy with a lower tax rate meant that the private economy was generating more money. So it actually was generating more tax, but it was less of a burden on people because the tax burden percentage of income was lower, even though the government was making more money because more people were working. More people were earning more money than they did before. So everybody wins. Rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't trickle down, as they said. It was actually, it was a massive tide. It was a spring tide, and up they went. Bianchi, do you remember that?
Yeah, I think I remember.
Oh, go ahead.
I think I remember it now from learning about, you know, Reaganomics.
Ooh, that's an interesting term. That's usually a bad term. What'd you learn about
really?
Reaganomics? Well, yeah, because everybody hated Reagan. The Republicans hated him because he was good. You know, Democrats hated him because he was Republican. The left hated him for all kinds of reasons. The Europeans hated him. Remember, I was in Europe when Reagan was in office, and they all said, "Well, he's your nuclear cowboy. He's going to blow us all up." I said, "Don't be so stupid." You know, but they didn't.
I never knew it was a negative term.
Well, it is.
I thought
it
was just
is.
Because you know it was a distinct process to
that's interesting
that helped the economy.
It did help the economy. But see, if you're a leftist, they don't understand. They think that raising taxes is a good thing because it's not your money. They always talk about it in terms of their money. So they always see tax increases as like a noble cause because they can't relate to the idea that you can lower taxes and increase productivity and have the economy grow and have the government actually have more money because they don't care if the government has more money so much as they care about punishing people for making money. It's a really weird psychology. Well, somebody mentioned about Reaganomics. Now I'm curious.
Yeah.
No, you should cut the Congress salary. And
yeah, that's minor.
That pension plan that they have where they receive their full salary after so many terms.
Serve 2 years. I was thinking of serving in Congress for 2 years just for the pension. I'm sorry. I was, you know.
Yeah, that needs to go away. And also cutting taxes because you shouldn't be able to spend more than your revenue that you receive. And anytime that your expenditures is not equal to your revenue, mm-hmm. then that excess amount should go back to the people where it came from.
Well, you can cut taxes even more. So if you have, or you could do a refund, you could do a rebate, you could do a tax rebate. So if the government takes in $5 trillion in revenue and only spends $4 trillion, they could refund $1 trillion to the people. Ooh, that'd be great. I like that idea. But you can't do that as long as you have a national debt. That's the problem. Because all you do is increase the debt and the interest on the debt. So here's the big question.
Well, see, here's the thing with the national debt. If you didn't have the money to spend, you wouldn't have the debt. And that's where the problem comes in. And what they do now is spend what they don't have based on future possibilities. So that needs to go away. If you don't have the money, just as it is you as a personal citizen, you don't have the money, you don't, and, you know, these credit cards get you in trouble. But that's the basic principle. What you don't have, what you don't take in, you can't spend.
Yeah. The big idea is the one I have. Oh, there's Josie. So we're going to get to her in just a second. The big idea, and this is one that I'll be pushing, I'll be telling, introducing Christina Bob to this, is our bill that takes away the power of Congress to borrow money. So the best thing you can do, and it's an amendment, it's on writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. Go to the legislation item on the menu bar, scroll down three to all proposed laws, and I think it's like the fourth or fifth one down there. But it basically would stop Congress from borrowing any more money. That's it. That's my solution. It's so simple, so straightforward. If they can't borrow money, then you don't have deficits because they can't borrow money. You don't have inflation. You don't have a lot of things. And as the bonds mature, they've been floated to pay off the previous national debt. Each time a level of bonds is paid off, the debt reduces, which also reduces the interest on the national debt. And Derek Park and I figured about 30 or 40 years, well, actually he figured, that the national debt would be gone. Well, that's when, within Brianna's lifetime. Unless she does something stupid like bungee jumps. I'm just kidding. But think about that, Brianna. 30 or 40, let's just say 40 years from now, would you be willing to sponsor an amendment now that takes away the power of Congress to borrow money if 40 years from now there would be no national debt?
Right off now, like right off hand, I mean, it sounds like a good thing. But honestly, I don't really know a whole lot about that or what it would do. So, I mean, I really couldn't say with all honesty because I don't understand it fully. But, I mean, right offhand, I mean, it sounds good.
Okay. Wait, and you don't have to know. Remember, I mean, you're free to speculate. I don't ask questions that people know the answer to. That's no fun. I like the questions people don't know the answer to. Anyway, let's get you're welcome to stick around as long as you can. And let's get Josie here. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey. Buenos dias, chica.
Good morning. Buenos dias. Dobre utra for my people in the Ukraine. How
and
are
now,
you?
And now, fresh from the Tennessee Reawaken America tour, the one and only Josie Cossey.
We had a good time. It was very cold. It was cold.
So what happened? Tell me all about it.
Yeah, they had the event in a huge tent. I think.
Like a revival?
It was kind of cheap.
That's great.
Yeah.
What are you doing in a tent?
And I felt it's like.
Winter.
Yeah, it is winter. It was 30 degrees. They didn't have their act together organizing the VIP. I paid $500 per ticket, and we were like way on one side instead of the VIP seat.
Oh, no.
Uncomfortable seat. Yeah, those little plastic chairs.
Did you get a refund?
Long day.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No,
you get a refund?
But I put a complaint. Yeah, I put a complaint about it.
Okay.
And then... and then the food, it was a disaster. And they had three small little food trucks for about 5,000 people.
Oh.
And we were in line. Thank God I brought a thick, heavy-duty jacket that I just bought, you know, not long ago. I was outside in the cold, cold weather for 2 hours in line trying to get food from the food trucks. And finally, we were missing a lot of the speakers, you know, because we're outside on, in line. Instead of just taking a half an hour break for lunch, we were in line trying to buy food. And it just seemed like I was back in Cuba when people make those lines for hours and hours, you know, and we were not going anywhere. And one of the food trucks ran out of food. I think there was only like two people in each truck. They couldn't work fast enough. So I finally download an app, which I'm not a whiz with apps and things like that, like teenagers are. And I finally ordered Chick-fil-A. And you should have seen how many people were ordering Uber Eats or whatever. And there was a line of traffic that the police was guiding for all the food, the cars coming in and out, they don't know who, they're like, what is your name, what is your name? What a mess. It was, I put a nice complaint already, so.
That's
and I'm
funny.
Getting a little sore throat because I'm not used to this weather, being outside for 2 hours, and it was 30 degrees, you know. But,
I do. Glad
but
to stay home.
Other than that, go ahead.
No, I just said glad I stayed home. You know, it's a, yeah. Brianna's first. Brianna, if you have any questions for Josie on this Reawaken America tour. Brianna, do you know about these at all? Have you heard of these tours? They're going around the country.
Yeah, I've heard about them, but I don't really know much about them.
Okay.
It's fun. So it's like a two-day event. I believe they put way too many people on this particular event. The Ann Vanderstil, she didn't get to speak because there was no time. She showed up. Somebody seen her. I didn't get to see her.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, where is Ann? She never made it on stage because there was no time. But they had a lot of good doctors, a lot of good information about the vaccines. It's worse than what we think it is. What's her last? Penny? I cannot think of her first name right now.
Oh, Timpenny?
Great.
Sherry Timpenny?
Timpenny.
Yeah.
She was very, very
interesting
good.
Name.
Very good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Simone Gold, very good, too, with so much passion, and especially Dr. Artis. Oh, my gosh. And then the music started playing, like, time to get off the stage. And he's like, I got more to say. And people were, like, really, like, they wanted to hear more. And he's carrying in his pocket the blood clots that I guess he must have got from dead people at a funeral home. And we met in the back, and I introduced Ann, my girlfriend from Ohio that we met there. And he showed me, I said, can I hold it? And I took a picture of it. I think I sent it to you. I'm not sure. So we talked a little bit about it. And his wife was there and his son. Very nice people. But Judy Mikovich, she's awesome. She is promoting writeyourlove.com, Greg.
Yeah, I saw the video.
Right in front of everybody.
Did anybody ask her about it, though? That's the question. This is a follow-up. You know, see, the problem with it is, I mean, you and I know what that is. But when people are just listening and they're waiting for food, you know, how many people actually saw it and went, oh, writeyourlove.com, I'm going to advocate those bills? Because the bills were so tiny. The links were so small in that screenshot that she put up there.
Yeah, well, but I did share it with a lot of people, and people were taking a picture because I brought the page with all the information from the radio station, the website.
Good.
And the scheduled time they were on, and people were taking picture with their cell phone. Many people. I gave them the site, and so
good.
In a hotel, in the restaurant, I said, come and listen to us. We should be growing quickly. Next week we have a surprise. I invited this. Do you want me to tell people now?
It's up to you. If it's confirmed, yes. If not, no. We'll just kind of hold off. I like to wait until we actually.
Just remind her, Ashley's mom, the
okay.
young woman that was murdered at the Capitol. She was supposed to be on today with me. Yes, my guess. I didn't know if she had 15 minutes. She told me, I think I have 15 minutes. But then when we realized the time difference, that we're going to go to D.C. At the court. So she said, no, I won't be able to make it. It'll be 9 o'clock. I'll be in court. So it will happen next week, hopefully.
That's fine. Yeah,
so,
I'll clear reporter. You know, if we can talk to Ashley Babbitt's mother, yeah, absolutely. She's welcome anytime. But that's going to be fabulous. Yeah. See, you do some amazing work. I mean, the people that you meet, you know, the folks, you're such a schmoozer. And I mean that in a good way. You'll talk to anybody.
Yeah.
It's great. So if anybody wants to know schmoozing, talk to Josie. Yeah. You know, she's the best.
And then when she's ready, we got Mariposa. It's like butterfly in English. Mm-hmm. Mariposa. She'll be with us also.
I remember her.
She has a lot of stories, and she was in jail for 45 days. She was telling me all about it.
Oh, that's a different person. I thought you meant your friend, Mariposa. This is somebody different.
No, this is somebody different. She was in jail for 45 days, and then she'll share the story about the whole thing. I don't want to say anything. But she has a lot of stories about different things. She's very conservative, from California. Mm-hmm. And they were after her way before January the 6th, Greg, she was telling me, because she's a very out there telling it like it is, and they didn't like it. They didn't like her on Facebook and all this stuff that she was telling me.
Oh, I know
me.
That
she
feeling.
She's been researching. Yeah.
Like, I'm still restricted.
Yeah, we've been.
You know, really? They rolled over. You know, I had my first one started, I think, like 2 or 3 months ago. They said, you have a 90-day, you know, we're going to put you lower in the news feed. Well, I was already lower in the news. I don't know how much lower I can go, right? And so they renewed it January 9th. So they have like 5 different times they've renewed this 90-day thing. So I don't think I'm ever going to get out of the 90-day suspension, because they keep renewing it, you know, 30 days into it. And so you never get out.
Yeah.
I'm still not going to – I'll still do what I do.
But a few of the doctors were – warning us about the flu shots. Stay away from that. Stay away from any shots. And please advise your families to stay away from any child vaccine, period.
Yeah.
They're tampering with it. And they've been doing this for years and years. We just did not know. Like,
well,
Dr. Judy was...
See, I still remember back in the 90s, though, when my daughter was younger, that mid-90s, there was another huge uprising against vaccines then, because we had Gulf War Syndrome, we had some of the other problems, and so the whole anti-vax movement, and people, I've talked about this before, people say, well, I'm not anti-vax, I just don't like this one. Well, I am anti-vax, and I've been anti-vax since the 90s. I see no use for these things. They cause more trouble than they solve. Most of the diseases are either cured by natural immunity, sanitation, or other things. The so-called vaccine comes along, you know, after the disease is pretty much gone. We had that confirmed yesterday. We had Rebecca Hardy on from Texans for Vaccine Choice. She was a great person on yesterday. So you got to check out that show. She was talking about the same thing with polio. So the whole idea of these things. But you know who explained it best was Dr. Shiva. Dr. Shiva talked about medicine is individual, and the original purpose of the messenger RNA, you know, jab, the gene jab, was that it be tailored to every individual. But the last place where you don't have individual medicine, individual prescriptions, you know, where you have one size fits all, maximum economies of scale distribution is vaccines. They don't care if you've had the disease or not. They don't check your immunity. They don't care about your age, your sex, your genetic makeup, your predispositions. They don't care about anything, even if you're already immune to whatever it is they're giving you a shot for. They don't care about any of that. They give everybody the same thing, and they give kids less of it.
Like you just said, one size fits all, and that's not fair, because your doctor should say, hey, you got this and this and this and type of condition. You cannot do this. And they don't care. They just force them. If you don't get the job, you lose your job. If you don't get that, you walk out of the military, or you can be in trouble. So, you know, they have put humans in America in so much panic and fear and threat that's not right what these people have done. And, you know, it's sad, Greg, that I met so many people in this event that they are vaccinated and they're regretting it.
Ooh,
because all
I'm
the
sorry.
Ladies, we talked for an hour, and they've heard it all. They were like heartbroken because they know they're going to die. And what do you do? You know, I was talking to this lady.
You go to therealdrjudy.com. I think it's Cardio Miracle and some other things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You reduce the spike proteins in your blood.
That.
You get rid of the blood clots. Yeah. You know, you do everything you can. In fact, I remember my PSA used to play saying, you know, once you have it, it's too late. You know, but it's not true. There are things you can do now. There's a lot of things you can do. But that's not widespread
either.
But
one of the doctors, I forgot who it was, he said nothing is going to help. Once you get the shot, you're done. He says anytime that you got the shot, like my mom's cousin died within 20 minutes from the second shot.
Oh, wow.
Well, she had a stroke and then she died 20 minutes after. Anytime from the time you get the vaccine, you might have 3 to 5 years, and that's about it, this other doctor was saying. And then another doctor, and I forgot who it was so many, and another doctor was saying that it seems like they're working on a reverse, you know, like the reverse abortion injection that, Dr. Lyle has. And there's been a few babies that we have reversed after they take the pill to abort the baby. There's a reverse, not pill, but injection that Dr. Lyle has done.
Well, that's
two
interesting.
Babies have been born.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So
see,
there's
well, they do that with
working.
With fentanyl, there's something, I forgot what it's called, starts with an N, but there's something you can take that cancels fentanyl. Anti-venom works the same way. If you got a snake bite or a spider bite, they can counteract the poison with anti-venom. So this is actually a fairly common, you know, medical treatment to reverse, you know, allergy medicine reverses the effects of your allergy. So this is, it would not surprise me that there's a reverse drug that stops the, is it RU486?
Well, they're working on it, he said.
Yeah.
So I felt sad for this woman at the hotel talking because she heard the whole thing for 2 days, okay? And then her and her husband, the reason she got the shot, because she needed surgery, and they had sorry, but we cannot do surgery unless you're vaccinated. And she was so scared to do it, but didn't have any choice at that time because she really needed the surgery. So her husband says, honey, I will take the shot too, and if we die both, we die together. So both are fully vaccinated.
They should never have that. Have to make a decision
never.
Like that. Yeah.
No, the hospitals are criminals, and we know it now. We did not know then, but they are criminals. And like I was saying, I don't know if I shared with you about this nurse. I think I did last week, actually. That this lady ripped her head open, and the blood clots were coming out of the cut, and he's picking this lady up. He's never seen anything like it. And if a nurse is accused in a hospital of being murderous, can you imagine other people that don't have a clue what are they going to be calling these hospitals and doctors in it? It is a shame.
This is a Holocaust.
That a lot of doctors are involved.
A medical-induced Holocaust. You know, we Germany killed 6 million. Actually, it killed 6 million Jews. Probably another 6 million other people. That's nothing compared to what's happening now, and it's all happening individually.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not being recorded. It's not being noticed. Nobody knows yet. So here's what do you think is going to happen? Bianchi's online too. You can speculate on this as well. When the majority of people who were forced, they thought forced. I mean, like I say, you can quit your job. You could have gotten out of the military. You don't have to take it. People, you know, or surgery, there must be a place you can go, you know, for surgery. I don't know where you go, maybe a state or something like that. I know people felt compelled to do it. But what are people going to do once, you know, enough people realize that they've been betrayed on this and they've got a death sentence? Or, you know, you're going to have a revolution in this country. And we just have to stand back and you know, the vaccinated are going to go nuts. And they're going to be
Let me share a quick thing.
Brianna's still on?
No, Brianna's left us. No, she hung up a little bit ago, but that's okay. Yeah. But she knows.
But let me tell you quickly before I forget. Last night I was going back and forth texting with my friend.
Wow. Mike Flynn? General Mike Flynn? Oh, Jesse just dropped. She drops at the wrong time. So you mentioned Mike Flynn's name and your call immediately gets canceled. That's hysterical. Piaki, what were you going to say?
No, I thought Brianna was still on. I was going to ask her that question, but she's gone, and see what her thoughts are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, Josie's back. Yeah, Brianna normally, like I say, she doesn't really have, like, contact information or websites or things like that, so I really don't ask her that question. So I just, you know, invite her to stay on as long as she wants to, and then when she has, you know, school, then she goes. Which makes sense. So she only hangs on about 10, 15 minutes at the most anyway. But you never know. I mean, you can always ask. But Josie's back. So you said Mike Flynn, and then you disappeared. Is that the FBI, KGB listening to us again or what?
I don't know. My colon just boom. But last night I was texting with my girlfriend that I begged her not to vaccinate her husband. He had a stroke a few years before the pandemic. And he needed some minor surgery, and they were going to help him in the head to see if he can have his speech recover again and whatever. But they forced him, if he didn't get the shot, that they were not going to do no type of surgery, too. This is one of my childhood friends I grew up with in Miami. So she got the first shot, and she didn't tell me. She kept it all a secret, so I begged her not to. And then the second shot. And a few days later, his head was like a watermelon. I shared with you guys before. So last night, we were going back and forth because I'm on fire about everything that I heard this weekend from all this type of doctors, not just one or two, but many doctors were there. And I was sharing with her that let's rescue your children if you don't want to rescue yourself. And she said, I don't want to talk about it. I'm in a lot of pain with what I have been through. I blame the vaccine for my husband's death, meaning she blames herself because she didn't listen to me. Mm-hmm. And but the thing is, she's in denial that she don't want no help. She don't want anything for her. I think her daughter's like under 30 maybe, or her son. They're both young. And she refuses help. And I don't know why. I mean, because last time we talked on the phone, she goes, well, it's too late for all of us vaccinated. That's what she said. There's nothing we can do.
That's not true.
There is something.
That's not true.
I know.
We used to think it was true.
So I just feel sorry.
That's why I don't play that PSA anymore, because it's not true. Judy Mikovits told me on the air. So great, that's not true anymore. I'm like, okay, tell me. You know, then we learned about all these things. Yeah.
Yeah. So Bianchi, good morning. I know you were going to say something, but I didn't want to forget that part from last night.
Good morning, Josie. I'm happy to know that you're back safely and you're still on top of everything.
Well, I try. How you been? Thank you for the videos. You just sent me one about this teacher and a coach collapsing, and we're going to hear
more and more of this.
That's what the doctors were saying. At the end of the year, we're going to have so many people dead. It's going to be normal. Oh, so-and-so dropped it. So-and-so had a heart attack. So-and-so had a stroke. We're going to be kind of like immune to it. Like, it's going to be normal to hear that so-and-so dropped dead of a heart attack. Very sad.
Well, they're still hiding it. They're still not saying, you know, the code words are died suddenly, you know, as we all hear. And they don't give a cause. Yes, but I'm guessing 90-95% of the cases when people die, especially dying suddenly, you generally know what it is. If they have a bad heart, it was a heart condition. If they have cancer, it was cancer. If they have a stroke, you know, I mean, that's pretty obvious what these causes of death, and those are the big ones. If they're alcoholic, you know, that we know that causes death. If they smoke and get lung cancer, there's a cause of death. So most people generally know, you know, or if you have whatever comorbidities, if you have diabetes, alcoholism, you know, obesity and something else, you know, a bad heart, put all those together. Well, we know what killed you, those four, you know. And so how do we not know? So to me, when they don't give a cause of death or they say natural causes, which is code word for the COVID shot, we know. So when's the revolt going to start?
Yeah.
When are people going to, you know, what's the critical mass? You know, at what point are enough people going to get furious that they're going to be storming their government offices and saying, how dare you? You know, and it was all for money. So here's the sickening thing.
Yeah.
The hospitals, the reason they were insisting on the COVID jab, the snake oil, was not because it was a health measure, because we all knew it wasn't. Because 99.97% of people do fine with COVID. In fact, Dr. McCullough released on the show that 94% of Americans have had COVID. Well, if 94% of Americans have had COVID, that's herd immunity. That was herd immunity way back at 70% or less. So there's nowhere for COVID to go except to vaccinated people, quote unquote, because they have a lower immune system and they're the ones generating the mutants, the mutations, mutants, like that. So all the mutations are being generated among people that had the jab because they have a lowered immune system that was, quote, specific to one particular strain, usually the one that doesn't exist anymore. So everybody who's getting a jab now is getting a jab for a virus that died, you know, in 2021. It was gone by then. We only had the variants. And all the rest of us have had it. I mean, like I said, Josie, you heard me on the air. Bianchi, too, you heard me when I had COVID.
Yes.
I sounded terrible for 2 weeks, but I wasn't dying. You know, I could breathe fine. I just was, you know, run down, and my voice sounded like hell. and I coughed a lot.
Well, you sound like a different guy on the radio at that time.
I should get those. I keep meaning to get those out. Do my COVID anniversary shows when I sounded terrible. I was begging for co-hosts. Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't know what it was. Nobody knew what it was. Pianchi?
There's so much going on. The coroner in Seattle, Washington is running out of space for dead bodies because of the fentanyl surge. They've had at least one person die each day of this month thus far, and they don't have no place to store these people.
Wow. Well, how's it doing? How's COVID doing? Go ahead, Josie.
Bianchi, but about 4 years ago, there was a video going around that there was almost 1 million portable coffins somewhere in Georgia put somewhere by the Democrats because they've been planning this killing for a long time, and they were not going to have enough cemetery funeral homes, that they were just going to dump the bodies on those portable coffins that you can fit at least 3 people on each one.
Wow.
And they almost had about 1 million in the videos where they showing.
Do you know who's not dying? Do you know who's not dying from COVID jabs?
Them.
Well, them too, but I'm just saying illegal aliens, because they don't have to have it. There's no requirement for illegal aliens who are getting welfare illegally and other things illegally, voting illegally, but there's no requirement for illegal aliens to get a COVID shot.
They're not requiring the vaccine.
Because they don't work legally, right? You know, at least they shouldn't. So I had a theory, and I was listening to Naomi Wolf yesterday. She was on Steve Bannon, and I've heard her before on Emma Robinson. So I usually listen. Oh, I forgot to make an announcement. I'm going to be on with Brian Artis at the end of the show. So show ends at 10. I'm on with Brian Artis at 11. So I just found out today. I got a text during the show. So that's going to be kind of cool.
Oh, today?
Yeah, today. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to happen right out. Yeah. I'm starting to get more interviews directly after my show. So I already got the adrenaline flowing. So check into Brian's show. I'll be on the Brian Artis show. Yeah. I'll post that afterwards. Yeah. I just started Substack too. So I got my first Substack article out too. So I'm going to have more of those coming. But, so the theory I was kind of forming yesterday, I'm going to do a show on this or a series of shows. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do it. But the left is fond of talking about the Great Replacement. You know, this bogus theory that white people are scared that people who are not white are going to take over the country and the white people are going to end up in gulags or live in a country where, you know, people don't look like us. Well, I say that on a show where I'm the only white guy, right? But it's kind of funny. And we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. But the real great replacement is replacing people that believe in freedom. And so in this country, Western Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, you know, any place where and the strongest beliefs in freedom started in England, you know, with white guys, you know, started with Magna Carta, and, you know, and then came to the United States. And so this is the greatest country of freedom. Now, the nice thing is that freedom's for everybody, you know, and so but it doesn't matter who it is. But you look at the people, you know, the entertainers, the football players, you know, everybody that makes up America, all our different, you know, backgrounds. And both sexes. You know, of course, there's no more than that. But those are the folks who are dying. Anybody who believes in freedom, anybody who's successful, anybody who's an entertainer, you know, all these folks that bragged about getting the jab, you know, and Larry King, you know, Hank Aaron.
Yeah,
you know, all
Larry
these folks
King
that,
died from the vaccine.
Yeah, they all lined up for Hank Aaron and Marvin Hagler were like the first big three. Those are the ones that come to mind. Irene Cara, all these different, Ivana Trump, very popular. She was definitely, you know, got the jab. Lisa Marie Presley.
Lisa Marie Presley died.
Just died.
Basically.
And I think she was a
And was
you know,
telling me from Ohio that she heard that she had a booster like a few days before her heart attack. Because the boosters are bad.
Well, the more
and,
you get, the worse it is. It's like poison.
Yeah. Did you hear of the ceremony they had to honor Diamond? And her sister's talking about, she didn't say that she got vaccinated, but I thought she was not vaccinated at all. So I don't know.
I've been thinking about that.
Died.
I was thinking about that.
I don't know.
Because the way she died, I heard a clip. I didn't see the actual, the whole funeral, the whole ceremony. I should probably watch it. If I watch everything I watch, I would never do my show. That's the problem. But I was thinking, because she kept talking about her breath was getting less and less, and she died very quickly and very suddenly. So it sounds like a COVID shot. And we're not the only one speculating. I can't tell you my source, but you know,
that's
people.
That's what
I
sounds
talk
to me.
It sounds to me too. Mm-hmm. So here's my question: you know, would Silk, you know, admit that? You know, is that something that's going to come out? I mean, is, you know, I mean, a lot of conservatives took the jab for various reasons, but did she, you know, mm-hmm. did Diamond panic early on and insist on getting it? I mean, it was free will. People had a choice. In fact, it was easier to get it than not get it.
Mm.
Not getting it was the position.
Well,
so here's the question. Did Silk get one too?
I don't know.
I don't
because
either.
I thought these women were very conservative and not were doing none of that crap. So I don't
well,
know
how,
what's going on.
Well, here's the question for you. I guess Bianca
they
in a second.
They are conservative.
Here, but so now here's the question. How many conservatives have secretly gotten the jab and don't want to say so?
They have.
Yeah.
They're scared. They are
they're
afraid.
They're scared.
Bianca, go ahead. Tell me.
Wow.
Yeah, they are afraid. You see, that's human nature. Human natures bring about fear. I don't care what your
right.
political aspiration is. Your first rule of the day is survival. And also, they just can't believe that what we're talking about, that there's somebody out there would kill you today in this country. They just can't believe that. So,
why wouldn't they believe it?
Yeah.
Didn't everybody study the Holocaust in school? I mean, I learned at 10 years old. You know, I was 10 years old in Australia, and there was a British special that came out called The World at War. It was narrated by Laurence Olivier. You know, my parents told me about it. They didn't realize how graphic it really was. I mean, they showed us the death camp films, and they showed us the bodies and the whole bit. And you know, I didn't quite have nightmares, but I was really horrified and disgusted. And I thought, and of course, my first question is, how could Germans let this happen? How could they not know? And as you got more into the story, you found out they really didn't know about the Holocaust, but they certainly knew about Hitler. And they certainly – and they elected him. I mean, he was democratically elected. So there's your democracy in action, folks. You know, and so, you know, do we fault the German people for not doing anything? Well, those that did were lined up against the wall and shot, you know, because the Nazis were organized. So the Nazis were only 2% of the population in Germany when Hitler took over. They're a very small percentage, but they were organized. Same thing with our federal government. We have enough people, enough guns to overrun our federal government anytime we want to, but we're not organized. And I don't recommend it anyway. I'm just saying, but we the American people are physically capable of doing anything we want if we're organized, but we're not. See, this is why the federal government has power, because the federal government's not that big. You're talking about 287,000 armed bureaucrats. Okay, well, there's a lot more than that armed in any major city of regular American citizens. You know, but they're organized.
Hmm.
And they've got the tanks and the airplanes.
Well, you know,
the
thing that gets me is that these people, you see, anybody in certain areas of the country, the people are so naive that
mm-hmm.
they vote for folks other than why they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And a person who was a person who was unemployed one day could be congressman the next. And then if they work for two terms, they receive $180,000 free medical at
mm-hmm.
with Walter Reed. That's ridiculous.
I thought it was one term, but it might be two terms. You might be right. I mean, it's certainly worth checking. But yeah,
I think it's two terms.
I'll
kind of
okay,
person,
well, that's fine. Yeah.
Well,
one
here's
term
another
senator.
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to at two terms and you're going to receive that pension for life, which is your salary, why would
right.
you continue to stay there? Well, I can tell you why. Because they want to get some more money from lobbyists, from advocates
mm-hmm.
of certain. Electric cars, for instance.
Insider
That's
trading.
That's why they stay there.
Yeah, insider trading is a big one. Plus the speaking fees, endorsements, and everything else.
But what's been happening with our government system is they've been cheating for years and years and years and years. We did not know. That's why
mm-hmm.
they act like if they're going to lose, and all of a sudden they win by a few points, and they make sure they win. And that's why some people are there 40, 50 years in
mm-hmm.
office. It is ridiculous that they stay that long until they die. It is sad.
This is why I started Action Radio. No, Jesse, you're absolutely right. But this is the reason I started Action Radio is because I realized the politicians, you can have term limits. You can do anything you want. But as long as you have parties – and as long as you have loyalty away from, you know, we the people, that they're responsible to the lobbyists and to the parties and everybody else, no matter who's in office, doesn't matter whether
mm-hmm.
you have one person staying for 20 years or four people staying for 5 years. It doesn't matter. The politics, mm-hmm. the elections are stolen. The candidates are stolen. The only thing left is the laws. The only thing left that's transparent about our government is the laws, because you can read the laws. The laws are on the books. Now, they haven't found a way to disguise the laws yet. They're not hiding the laws from us. So the only thing we can really have an effect on is actually changing the laws. The only thing that's open are the laws themselves. And that's why I started Action Radio back in 2014. You know, so this has been a long... go ahead.
That's why we need term limits. That way these people quit cheating to stay in office that long. Term limits is so important. Look, the president can only stay 4 years, and that's about it. That should be done for everybody else. 4 to 6 years for some of the congressmen. And no more than that.
But what
because
if you
the corruption
get, well,
is so deep.
But what if you get a corrupt person every time? I mean, just no. See, this is why I don't think term limits work, because you can kick people out of office, but there's plenty of corrupt people to take their place. You're not changing the system.
It's okay, but at least you don't have the same idiot stealing like
it puts the odds
Newsom
in your favor.
In California. What you said, Bianchi?
I say it puts the odds in your favor. I would rather have to deal with 5 at 2 terms each than 1 at 10, 20 years each. He's already proven to be a crook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a valid point.
Yeah.
I just disagree. I don't think the candidates are the answer. I don't think term limits, because we have term limits. You know, so the problem is not really the candidates. The problem is the voters. The voters can turn out a member of Congress, a member of the House every 2 years. They can turn out a senator every 6 years. It's easy.
The voters are lazy because they keep hearing the same name. Oh, Nelson so-and-so from Florida. They keep voting for Nelson. What a crook.
Mm-hmm.
What a crook he was for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But see, it's just not that they're lazy too, but the cheating that we didn't know it was going on too. So it's a combination of both. And like everybody... Not everybody, but many people would text me, who do I vote for? Why can't they do their own research and make a decision for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
I was telling a lot of people who to vote for on Messenger. Oh, should I vote for this one? Or what about this one? And I'm like, I'm doing my homework. I know who not to vote for. So I did help a lot of people because we wanted to help our country. So it's sad that... But now a lot of people are learning more about politics than before because of the corruption that we're facing at this moment. People didn't have a clue about anything before. So these people been handling our country, stealing right in front of our eyes. And they're telling us about it. And we just been blinded about it. Not me, but many. So hopefully things will change pretty soon and things can go back to even better than what we were before in America. It would
be nice, but the fundamental question still... Go ahead, Pinky.
I don't think things are going to change pretty soon. I think it's going to get worse. And see, the key thing there... See, Greg, you say we already have term limits. Yeah, that is if things was running the way it's supposed to. But you got ignorant people. These people are ignorant.
Mm-hmm. That's why this idea of making everybody vote, you know, and requiring votes. I tell the ignorant, stay home. You know, we go to such Herculean efforts to have people vote. I would not have mail-in ballots. If you can't get to the polls, you can't get to the polls. Okay. If you can't get to the election office, you can't get to the election office. I would have early voting and absentee for those that absolutely can. But that's it. If you're too lazy to vote, don't vote. Stay away. Yeah, generally, the fewer people to vote, the better a decision, because only the informed people and the motivated people should be voting. The rest of you stay home. Watch football. Drink beer. Leave me alone. Don't vote.
We should have a
don't vote campaign. Don't vote unless you know. Unless you know what's going on, don't vote. You know,
don't vote unless you know.
Don't vote unless
like
you know.
That.
I'm going to write that down. Don't vote unless you know.
I like that.
That'll be our campaign in 2 years.
You know, the civil rights period in Mississippi, mm-hmm. they had remote ballot boxes. But you know what the difference was between then and now? People were honest then. They had morals. They had a set prescribed don't do's, you know, don't mm-hmm. steal and so forth. They were more
That's
moral
true.
And ethical then.
Yeah. And we didn't have drag queens in school.
Oh, my God, that's ridiculous. We had a couple drag queens drag at the event, Man, I cannot believe they have the biggest high heels and huge and tall, both of them. Mm-hmm. So-called girls, but they were not girls, you can tell.
No, they're guys. They're dudes. And, we should call them dude queens. Where did the word drag come from? They call them dude queens. Or how about transvestite? People don't use the word transvestite anymore. Well, one of the things I want to talk to trannies, yeah. Well, I like transvestite. You guys remember Rocky Horror Picture Show?
No.
Oh, you never saw it. Pianki, did you ever see the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
No.
Oh, this is crazy. All right. The Rocky Horror Picture Show. It made fun of transvestites. The lead character is a British actor. I've forgotten his name. He was also in Robin Hood, the Disney film. I'll think of his name in a minute. But he was great. Anyway, but the point was we could make fun of things. And one of the things I want to talk to Brianna about next time I get her on is the fact that, you know, we used to have a normal life. You know, this is not normal. What's going on now is not normal. People don't pick their own pronouns. They don't pick their genders. You know, marriage means a man and a woman. You know, I want to get back to normal life. You know, we've lost normal. We've lost all sight of normal. And we don't tell people that's not normal. You know, if you want to be a cross-dresser, fine. You know, go in your room and dress any way you want. But don't, you know, and even if you want to walk around the street, that's fine too. I don't really care. But don't go in schools. We got to protect the kids. You know, and so people are afraid to talk about what's normal. You know, it's like we were talking about earlier about, you know, the fact that people are accepting what the government says. Why would you ever, or it couldn't happen here. Why would you ever think that any government is different than any other government? Government's the same. Whether it's the German government, the Chinese government, the Japanese government, the Mongol government under Genghis Khan, you know, pick a government. Pick a government that hasn't been oppressive. They all do when they get enough power, you know. So it's human nature. So when the Germans said, well, it can't happen here. You know, it happened. You know, the only reason it didn't happen here in the United States because we had a socialist, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, is we had a constitution. He actually had limitations. He had to declare war. You know, then it's the last time we declared war. But the thing that separates us from the only reason we haven't had a dictatorship like these other places, Venezuela, is we have a constitution. Now the constitution is nowhere near as strong as it should be, nor is it enforced the way it should be. But it's still there. You know, it's still that thin paper line. You know, it's called the Constitution. It's the thin paper line between us and totalitarianism. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, today people are taught, young people aren't taught the Constitution. They taught feelings and what's right and wrong. See, mm-hmm. right and wrong is subjective. You have to have laws. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a law above all other laws. And they aren't taught that.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. We do all that stuff. but it's not. But that's, you know, see, fundamentally, you cannot have a free society if you have a government education. I think the governments have proven fundamentally, you know, we're on the Prussian model, you know, which became the German model, you know, which is a hierarchical, top-down factory assembly line. Basically, schools are built like 1800s factories, and they have a bell. You know, so it's conditioned people. It's like they're all Pavlov's dogs, conditioned to do things when the bell goes. Yeah, go ahead, Josie.
And, you know, like I said before over and over, it is so crazy about this gays and lesbian tranny and all that. Mm-hmm. They always choose, because I get a lot in my store, who's the woman and who's the man. So there it is, right there.
Mm-hmm.
They have knowledge that there should be a woman and a man. So they make a decision, this two girls. She's the he and she's the she.
Yeah, guys are the same thing.
I mean, they're freaking confused in the head, period.
Yeah, there were two guys, friends of mine, when I lived in Oakland, when I first moved out to California. And, you know, California, the Bay Area has a large gay population. So anyway, the two guys. And there was definitely the male guy and the female guy. And, not, you know, they weren't altering their genders, their physical makeup. They were just playing roles. One played the role of the guy. The gay guy was the guy, and then there was the gay guy with the woman. You know, it was pretty obvious the difference between them. They're both friends of mine. But there should be a
marriage with two men. I mean, according to them, two men. Why are you choosing a woman and a man? If you reject God's creation of a woman and a man, there should be a couple.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to marry a dude, so two dudes are married. Why are you calling her she and he's he? No. You know? It's so stupid. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing with lesbian couples. You have the more, you know, macho, brutal member of the pair, and you have the more feminine one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, lesbian relationships I've heard are the most violent. I mean, you know about domestic violence? Those are the ones, statistically.
Mm-hmm.
So feel free to look it up.
My niece,
but the question,
my niece is bisexual. My mm-hmm. niece, and she's going for all the women. She says she likes both. She likes men, too. She's confused. Poor young woman.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah, that would get you killed.
Why would it get you killed?
Liking men and women?
Well, from what I've heard, I actually met a bisexual dude. I was driving an airport shuttle. It's one of those weird jobs I had. And one of the guys, you know, was bisexual. And it was only the both of us in the advance. We actually got to talk openly about this. He says there are very few true bisexuals. He says a lot of people think they are, but, you know, most people are straight. A certain portion are gay. It's like 2% of the population. He says a very small percentage of them are actual true bisexuals, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know that.
Well, you know,
so, yeah.
Here's mm-hmm. the thing about it. It is nasty as hell to be that way. Because you are tunneling in one way with a man, and you're tunneling in one way with a female, and it's risky.
It's terrible.
Well, it's unnatural too. Yeah, it's not normal.
Sick. Like Josie said, it's sick. If it's not sick from just the idea, it's sick mm-hmm. from the indulgence in it.
Well, without getting too graphic on my show here, because people are still having breakfast, but the question is, can we redefine of what normal is? It's like people are terrified of using the word normal. Heterosexual is normal, homosexual is not. Now, do I condemn people for it? No. You know, other folks do, and that's fine. Would I call, you know, people of the same sex married? No, not legally, not by law. But if would I stop them from doing it? No, people can choose to be with whoever they want. I don't care.
Well, Iran would condemn you for it. Nigeria would condemn you for it.
Well, something about Nigeria.
In Iran,
I know what Iran does.
In Iran, you get lynched.
Well, yeah, exactly. But what does Nigeria do?
If you married and you're doing that, messing with and having a relationship with a man that way, you get lynched.
Really? That's interesting.
But you know, in the Middle East, they don't want gays, okay? But that's in front of the public's eyes. But
mm-hmm.
literally and truly, there's a lot of gays in the Middle East, and they're trafficking our young men. One of our young men, the grandparents used to come to the abortion clinic with, that 23-year-old beautiful young man. He's probably in the Middle East being sold daily in one of those huge castles. So it's just all fake. They're like fake news. They say they're going to behead if you're gay, but they're stealing our beautiful young men from our country as little kids, to bring him over there like a farm, to raise him over there. And I know for a fact about that because we rescued this woman, my church in Miami, we rescued mm-hmm. this woman that they had locked up being sold all day long. And then after 10 years, she was wore out. They sold her to this man for $30,000. She had a couple kids and she told us the whole thing that is going on in those huge castles. There's a lot of young men, a lot of beautiful, and a lot of them are American. And that's why we have millions of children being gone from our country and from a lot of countries. 10 million a year are missing all over the world, or more now. So they're fake. They love gays. This gay thing has been going on for a long time in a lot of countries. They just put a fake front so people think that they don't like gays, but they're in it too. So it's just a corruption completely worldwide. Joan Rivers, she called out Obama gay and Michelle Obama a tranny, and 2 weeks later she was dead from a minor surgery in her face. So
that's really interesting. Hey, let me ask you a question, just to sort of throw the other side of this. You know, for those that condemn gay people, and you know, our world would be very different without gay entertainers, particularly gay artists. You know, Freddie Mercury of Queen was gay, obviously, but we'd have a lot less music without Queen. Liberace, you know, piano player, known gay. I'm not talking about people that we don't know. But think about this for a second, okay?
Yeah.
So in other words, you can't have it both ways. You can't condemn gay people and want to have them out of society and not acknowledge the contributions. So the question is, where do you draw the line? Everybody has a line. My line is, I wouldn't stop gay people from getting together, but I don't want it called a marriage in law. in actual practice law, you know, a marriage is a man and a woman, you know, sanctioned by God, licensed by the state. So that I want to keep.
Well,
I want to preserve
the
language. Hold on just a second. But I want to preserve the language. Hold on a second. I want to preserve the language. I want to preserve the law. But I would not stop people from doing what they want to do as long as they don't affect the kids, as long as it's not out in public. Because those are just basic, you know, rules of civility. That's my line. But I also want to acknowledge that without gay people, our world would be very different. Just like if this country had no black people, it'd be very different. Although there are people who would want to do that. The real white supremacists, the left-wing ones. Or they want to kick out anybody, you know, who's not of their whatever group. So you got to understand that this country would not be what it is without all those different people.
But being black or Latina or white, it's not a lifestyle. You were born like that. There's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not convinced that
gay
people aren't born gay.
The gay thing is a choice.
No, I see. I'm not convinced of that.
No, they're not born gay.
Okay. Well, I've talked to a lot of gay people. I lived in San Francisco. I was not that far from the Castro.
But great.
Yeah. That's
fine. In the past, that I grew up with a gay guy in my neighborhood when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
He kept it to himself. He didn't indoctrinate us for us to become gays. I mean, mm-hmm. It's to the point now that they're shoving it in your face, and either you take it or you're a terrorist.
See, the political agenda is wrong.
Discriminating them.
Yeah, I agree with you. That.
If you
want to
live that lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
if you want to live that lifestyle, go ahead, keep it to yourself. I mean, I know I'm not going to do that, but it's okay. We have freedom to do whatever we want,
yeah.
But don't come and shove it in my face. I don't want to know about it. You
okay.
Keep it.
All right. Pianki?
Yeah, key thing you said is the kids. The first thing they want to do is start gravitating to the kids. You know why? Mm-hmm. Because they don't produce no kids. And I don't think that they should be adopting kids either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing is – I see two white males that's gay, and they don't adopt a couple of black babies.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I say it. That's ridiculous.
No, that's okay. Well, let me put it this way. Our kids – let's use my favorite word of today, normal. Our kids who are adopted entitled to a normal life, being a heterosexual married couple.
A mom and dad.
You know, a mom and dad. Okay, so that to me is normal. Now, are all families perfect? No. You know, if we run out of, you know, normal, if we run out of straight parents, would some kids better off with gay parents in foster care? Probably. But in the
No, what you do is find some heterosexual parents and make it work. Just like when you go buy fruit. If you pick up an apple, it's too soft. Mm-hmm. You go to try another apple.
Mm-hmm. How about single parents? You know, would you favor single parent adoption? Over a gay couple adoption?
A single parent
single
with
parent.
A family structure. Brothers,
okay.
Fathers, uncles, aunts.
Okay. That's a fair point.
But Greg,
tend to agree.
What
mm-hmm.
I was told by this black young man a couple months ago, less mm-hmm. than a couple months ago, he was in my store. He's gay. He had the fingernails and all that. And I said, what's wrong with you? I tell him like that. I don't care. And he goes, yeah, I know. I said, what's going on with those nails? He looked like a girl. And I'm trying to get him scrubbed for a guy. And we started talking, and he opened up to me. He says, I know that it's wrong what I'm doing. I think I'm gay, and I know in God's eyes it's wrong what I'm doing, and blah, blah, blah. And he ended up holding hands and crying and praying.
Wow.
And he was telling me something.
I wouldn't
say
I'll do it.
Like, like Bianchi.
Well,
gets,
yeah.
Like Bianchi.
Yeah,
I wouldn't fail to them because you got cases,
go
Josie,
ahead.
Where I was just hearing this the other day. I'm trying to find the story where this man, this is a black guy too. He supported. He was pro the decision, the Supreme Court's
mm-hmm.
decision on Roe. Well, he went into a place and they found out they wouldn't serve him.
Mm.
Yeah, you can't do that. The public accommodation laws prevent that. That's discrimination.
But
ideological discrimination is discrimination. Go ahead, Jesse. Finish.
Pray, hold hands, because I love him. He's a human being. But he's just confused, and he admitted it, that he's confused. And then he was telling me, he works for the social workers here, the services, child and whatever you call it, services. And he was telling me that it's not good. A lot of these men adopting little boys, it's not good at all. And he told me a lot of stuff that I don't want to repeat. But at the end, when this young man crying and praying, because he loves Jesus, but he's confused, he says, I know Jesus is not happy with me. And I said, I'm going to pray for a wife for you. And he was walking out of the door, and he says, yes, please pray for me that I'll find a wife. And then he came and picked up his jacket, and he goes, my life felt so good when I walked out of here. I said, well, make the changes. Satan is after you, and you need to tell him, just get out of my life. So you never know who you're going to touch, who you're going to show them that you love them, you know. And I know he wants to make changes, and I can tell.
Well, it's good.
Falling apart, crying about it.
Yeah.
So we have
so
to
now,
be
so here's
there
a question, though.
At all times.
Well, so the question is, how many people are gay because they've been coerced into it? Like kids are being coerced into thinking that if they, quote, change their gender, which we know can't be done, that somehow their life will be happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did someone in this person's life, you know, priest, Boy Scout leader, teacher, coach, did someone in this person's life convince him that he would
they
be better and happier
religion.
Gay? Go ahead.
They ought to get religion.
Okay, but think about that. So how are young people affected? They're affected by good influences and bad influences. We know that.
He was raised by his stepdad, this young man.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
So that's a whole different topic.
Yep.
Yeah, now, see, we don't want to get too personal here. I don't want this person to be identified.
Well,
but the
I don't
thing
know
is,
his name.
I wouldn't allow.
Okay.
I wouldn't allow a gay teacher to teach my kids.
Okay. Another good reason
out of
to
this room.
But what if you had a gay teacher that was a really good teacher and never brought it into the classroom and never, it wasn't a part of their teaching any more than a straight teacher, you know, bringing their sexuality into the classroom?
At elementary, no.
Teaching, so we don't get to see her.
Okay, we got two of you once. Pianki says no at elementary school. What did you say, Josie?
She or he can do online teaching, so we don't have to see
online teaching.
What's going on?
Well, what about junior high, high school? You know, you got kids that are older, especially high school. Why would you care about a gay teacher in high school? Especially, we're not talking about someone that's flaunting it, like that person with the prosthetic breasts or whatever that stupid thing was. But what about just a teacher who is gay? I mean, you know, we have gay conservatives, you know, running major organizations.
I tell you
and
what,
serving
because
the government,
he would come in and
bring
his mate in front of the class.
But that's,
and
see,
then he come in, one of them come in wearing Daisy Dukes shorts.
it's a horrible image he's painting. But again, the question was, if they didn't bring the fact that they're gay into the classroom at all, is there anything, do you think that gay folks are inherently incapable of not bringing the fact that they're gay into the classroom? That's the question.
Well, some way or another, they will let their lifestyle be a influence in the way they deliver the lesson.
Okay, so you're saying that gay teachers are incapable of not bringing gay sexuality into their teaching. Well, that's a fair point.
And
you know,
can't take a chance with your children. It's just like leaving a gun on the table unprotected. You can't do
that's
that
kind of
around
yeah.
kids.
So at what point now, so would you question people that are going to teach elementary school and ask them point blank, are you gay? Would you want to have that? Because I think that's against the law right now. But would you change the law to do background checks to make sure you didn't have gay teachers at elementary school? I mean, how far would you go with it?
I would ask them point blank, are you gay?
Mm-hmm.
My child's sitting in your classroom, and I don't have nothing against you, but you know, I'm not going to chance my child being around you. I just don't chance it.
Yeah.
And then you might have the bleeding heart liberals and say, well, what about the other ones over there? Well, you know, that's a problem too, but let's handle one problem at a time.
But
Josie?
You know what's going on right now, Greg and Bianchi?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of gay people, and including my niece, she's bisexual. They don't want to indoctrinate the little kids of their lifestyle. This is our government pushing it. This is not them personally, a lot of them, I'm not saying all of them. This is our government indoctrinating our schools because our school, and we pay taxes, and they work for us, and they're shoving this garbage to our little kids. And now they're mutilating the sex parts, and the parents don't have no say-so in some of the states. And this is horrible and a disgrace to families, to moms and dads. This is our government doing it. Because my niece, she thinks she's a bisexual. Sometimes she calls herself just lesbian, but she's confused. But she says, I disagree. She tells me all the time, I disagree the crap that they're doing to the little kids. And that's what she tells me all the time, my niece. And I have asked other gay couples that come to my store, what do you think about what's going on? And they disagree too. So this is our government doing it to us. That's what's going on.
Okay.
What you think about that?
It's an interesting discussion. I mean, it's quite fascinating. I don't know how you do that. You know, like I say, if you're going to investigate people, well, what are the background checks for teachers? How much does it actually investigate? I'm sure they do a criminal background check, obviously. They do that for jobs. But how are teachers vetted? Does anybody know that? I'm just curious.
I'm laughing here to myself.
About what?
How are teachers what?
You have to go to the restroom and see if they go to the men's bathroom or the women's bathroom and stand right there. I'm just kidding.
Oh, no. I know.
Yeah, do they stand up or do they sit down when they pee?
If you pee standing up, you're not. I'm just kidding.
Yes, our wildly uncontrolled discussion.
I'm having fun.
I can tell. That's okay.
What kind of bike do they ride? What kind of bike do they ride to school?
Oh my God.
A little off topic at this point, folks.
Forgive me,
my panel, my wayward panel. Let's go. Fortunately, we came to the end of the hour, which is good.
We're out of control.
Yeah, I know that.
Oh,
well, but
God.
They're reasonable questions. See, here's the thing. It all comes back to
I know that.
To normal. You know, is normal behavior,
yeah.
You know, I don't care about a gay teacher in the classroom so much as elementary school. Yeah, it might not be the best thing. But, you know, well, how about gay little league coaches? You know.
No.
At what point? Okay.
That's worse than Boy Scouts. You know, another thing, too. I mean, you know, if it's rough sports, I don't see him playing rough sports anyway. But when you're dating and you're sitting on one side of the table and the other person on the other side, and you are like Greg Pinglis, you're looking for a female. But that person on the other side of the table may not be a real female, and they need to tell you what they are. They need to come out and say, look, I'm a transvestite. They need to tell you. They need to tell, in the case of Joseph, look, I'm bisexual. I have sex with men. They need to tell you.
At what
and that
point
saves
they
a lot of trouble
you?
In the long run,
right.
Especially money
they...
you paying for the damn drinks.
See, but the question is, at what point do they need to tell you? See, I don't have the – see, with me, the determination is, do they bring their sexuality into whatever it is? Because, you know, there's a lot of heterosexuals that bring their sexuality, like you're saying, you know, be affectionate with their partner in front of the kids. You can't do that either. So the question is, it's behavior-based. It's not who you are-based to me. So in other words, I don't have a problem with a gay teacher, especially in junior high school, because the kids are a little older, first of all. And secondly, the issue may come up. Kids may have questions. But do you deal with it academically, or do you deal with it saying, this is what you have to believe? So my line is very simple. Mm. Drag queens in the elementary schools? Absolutely not. Don't do that to the kids.
Absolutely
kids deserve
not.
A normal education. Okay? Now,
yeah.
That doesn't mean you shelter them from all the bad things in history. Like I said, I learned about the Holocaust when I was 10 years old. You know, so that's a different kind of thing.
Some of these transvestites have breasts and the other parts of their male biological identity.
Well,
they
transvestites different. Transvestites are cross-dressers.
You're
talking about, you know,
what,
yeah.
They
okay,
should
no,
tell
fine.
You who and what they are. Because here's the point. That could save their life. Because when you're dating somebody, especially in today's culture, hell, you got people that want to have sex on the first night. Well, that's today's culture. It's no way in the world I've
oh,
done
no,
that when
me.
I was
it's yesterday's in. Culture, too. That goes back to the 70s.
Well, no, it's not. It wasn't for everybody.
Back to the
it was not like
know.
That.
Yeah, well, it wasn't California. It wasn't New England,
okay,
but that's another story.
Greg,
we got to go.
I was watching Greg, just quickly, and I'm going to be off the phone.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
I was watching a couple weeks ago Truth and Art TV, that I watch it all the time at night. And he was reporting that this gay teacher, she was supposed to go to a camp with the kids, little kids. I don't know if they were like 7 or 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And instead of going to the camp, she took him straight to this strip club during the day. And they were teaching the kids how to do the pole dance.
Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine it. I just can't condone it, but I can certainly imagine it.
Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a quick story. This wife was suspicious of her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So when he goes to sleep, she would get his cell phone and look in the cell phone for female names and pass by all the male names.
Mm-hmm.
He was
not
messing with other men.
Oh, that's it. He was messing with other men and she was looking for female names?
Looking for the wrong sex.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of gay guys who are married who want kids. That's a whole different topic. All right, let's hold this up for a bit. I want to talk about airlines when we come back. I got a caller on the line who has not identified themselves on live chat, which I ask people to do, is not in my bank of phone numbers. So this is a new caller, but of course I always record the numbers of new callers. And so what I'm going to try is do a little call screening. So I'll be off the air for a minute. I'm going to play a couple of commercials here. So we're going to take a break. Josie, you have to go. Do you want to give a shameless plug for your store? And then...
Ruth Uniform Shop on Olive Road. If anybody needs uniform for chef or nursing, we got it all. And we're the information center. If you want to come and tell us what's going on at your facility or the hospital, nursing home, I want to know.
Yeah, and it may be reported on Action Radio, but we will withhold names and, you know, to protect everybody.
And Action Radio. Bye.
All right. See you, Josie. Take care. All right. So I'm going to play a couple things right now. We've got to, it's 9:07. Take a little break, and I've got a mystery caller. Like I say, I always ask people, it's right there on live chat, you know, give your first name, where you're calling from, your topic in question, so I can do a little pre-screening. This caller hasn't done that, so I'm going to try it the old-fashioned way. I'll play a commercial, go off the air briefly, and see what they want. I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Okay, this is fascinating. So I'm right back. We have Robert Spencer on the line. So it was an interview I was told was postponed until next week. But listen, I get a chance to talk to Robert Spencer, who I've been watching on One American News. You know, he heads up Jihad Watch. I get his newsletter. So we're just going to wing it. We're going to wing an interview here. Robert Spencer, welcome to Action Radio.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Greg. Sorry about that. They actually did tell me they were going to change it, but then when it showed up on my schedule today, I thought, uh-huh. Oh, well, it must be still on. So as it happened, I called, and here we are.
Well, I'm sorry to keep you on hold so long. Had I known, you know, I mean, because you're not in my data bank yet. You're right here in my phone book, you know, for your interview next week, but that's okay. So I'll tell you what. We'll do what we do best, improvise. Tell us what, you know, about your book and Jihad Watch, and then I'll have a bunch of shameless questions, but just go for it.
Absolutely.
Good morning.
Yeah, the deal is the reason why they're scheduling is because I have a new book out called The Sumter Gambit, How the Left Civil War, and that essentially sums up what the book's about right there, that the left is trying to push us over the brink into a civil war because it's a win-win situation for them. The way they see it is they push and push and push politically, in the cultural realm, in every way possible, and they're hoping, actually, that patriots are going to fight back because then they can use that as confirmation of everything they're saying about us, that we're traitors, insurrectionists, that we don't believe in our democracy and all this nonsense. So it's a win-win situation. They either win because we don't fight back or they win because we fight back. That's how they see it anyway.
This is fascinating because you know, we've contended that on the show. I don't know how much you heard. I guess you heard a few minutes of Josie and Pianchi talking earlier, but we've lost the word normal. People are afraid to say that you know, heterosexuality is normal, not because it's better or worse. Well, a lot of people think so, but because it's what most people do. It's not normal to have drag queens in school. it's not normal to pick pronouns. We have an English language. It's a normal marriage is a man and a woman, and you know, sanctioned by God, licensed by the state. So we've lost the ability of normal. People are so terrified of what to say. And this is the one show, I think, where we can say anything we want. Well, certain things you can't, you know, threaten public officials and stuff like that, or libel, slander, the normal stuff. But as far as anything else goes, this is a place where people can talk, and this is becoming progressively more rare. But we actually talk about things of what is normal and what is not. And the idea of the left trying to start a war, this is why I created Action Radio. I'll tell you about that in just a minute. But have we lost the ability to define normal, Robert? You still there? Where'd you go? Am I off the air?
Oh, hey, can you hear me now?
I can. Did you mute
Hello?
Yourself? Just ask, yeah, you're
I
there. I just asked,
just,
I asked a great question, and there's nothing, nobody there. You know,
well,
I
heard
FBI,
it all.
KGB.
I was actually, yeah, you never know with those guys, but I was actually in the mid-flight, and I didn't realize I had accidentally hit the mute.
Yeah, that's okay.
They should
Welcome
move
back.
That button. You know, you have the thing by your ear, and it hits the mute. Yeah. Anyway, this is the thing is that this is a deliberate effort, Greg, that the left wants to shame us into being afraid and intimidated into saying that all of their perversions are normal. And the idea is to get us all off balance and unsure of ourselves, discombobulated, unsure of what is normal anymore. And so we'll accept anything because we're afraid of being called bigots and racists and hate mongers, and being deplatformed and suffering professional and personal harm as a result.
So I've been deplatformed. I've had my accounts canceled, restricted. We had, especially on COVID, I had the Dr. Zelenko Action Radio Coronavirus Clearinghouse. We talked about ivermectin months before everybody else. What separates us here? Why am I fearless? Why is Pianchi and Josie, who were on the show earlier? You know, we have a 16-year-old reporter, Brianna Cannon, who does our government inquiry report. She's in the first hour. So when I'll be able to send you the podcast. You know, you can find out what separates us from them. Why are we fearless and we don't worry about these things? And I've been canceled. I've, you know, felt these effects, and my show has suffered drastically. You know, I even have a bill to fix big tech. But what separates us from them? Why are we not afraid, and why is everybody else afraid? What are they afraid of?
Well, I think that actually part of it is because we have gone through it, and because we have been canceled, we have been silenced, we have been demonized, smeared, marginalized, still standing, and we're still telling the truth. And so people, I think, when they feel like they got a lot to lose, then they get cautious, and they're more docile, and they're more willing to accept the bullying that is coming from the left. But when we have suffered it and we survive, then what do I got to lose now? What are they going to do?
Interesting.
Shadow ban me? Oh, I'm scared.
You know, it's funny. It's not a height thing or a warrior status or a combat veteran thing. I mean, I have people that are, like I say, we have a young female, a young adult who is just as fearless as anybody on the show. She's in high school. She was on earlier in the show. You know, so it's your character. And how do we inspire people to reach down to their character and just stop this? What happened to the America that stood up? What happened to the America of the protesters? What happened to the 60s people that questioned authority? The whole basis of this country is questioning. Where did that all go?
Well,
has it been bred out, educated out? What?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's been educated out, and a lot of that has to do with exactly what you were talking about before with the other folks you mentioned, that people get involved in this craziness. You know, they convince a man that he's a woman and a woman that she's a man, and they make them think that the only way they can find personal fulfillment is to chase ever more bizarre perversions and strange behaviors. And they end up going just in the opposite of personal courage and integrity. They end up becoming consumed with their own pleasures. And that's the only thing they're focused on. And they'll do anything to keep them, including sell out their very souls for it. And so the left comes and says, yeah, we'll affirm you in all this that you're involved in. And they say, great, that's what we're looking for, and we'll give you anything you want in return.
It's an addiction, you know. And you know what's missing from all this? And we talk about this a lot on the show, is the idea that the one thing I've noticed when I started Action Radio is how many people come to us with a very strong belief in God, that there is a higher power, that there is a moral code, that there's something in our lives beyond us. I mean, I credit God with the incredible amount of ideas that I have on a daily basis, you know. And so, but that common belief makes such a difference. And when you take it out of the schools and you take it out of life and you condemn any belief in God, you really sacrifice your freedom.
Yes.
What do you think?
Because, well, you know, God created the world, and God created male and female. That's right at the beginning of the scriptures. And so you have that, and then you have people who are rejecting that. It's not surprising that if they reject God, then they reject male and female as well. And they
That's
reject the whole creation as it's constituted. They want to remake it in their own image.
See, we were talking addiction just a minute ago. Do you see this as an addiction that ever more pleasure, there's just no limit to it? It's like the Roman orgies. Where do they stop?
Yeah, exactly. And it consumes you. You get caught up in it, and you can't stop because you need more and more, and it has to be wilder and wilder. It's like a drug addiction, you know? They say the drug addicts, they start with a little bit, and then they need more and more and more as their bodies grow accustomed to having this always in the bloodstream. And so it's the same kind of thing. And then Jesus says, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. It's increasingly clear that that was not just some arbitrary statement, but that actually is the way to genuine personal freedom, so that you are not enslaved to any of these things, but you are able to go through life on an even keel.
Interesting. So I remember you from Jihad Watch. So how did you get from Jihad Watch to the Civil War, and what is it about Islam that is such a breeding ground for terrorism and the theocracy, the whole control? Because, you know, you can't have Jesus and Muhammad at the same time. It doesn't work.
It's all connected up, Greg.
Tell me.
It's really amazing. The one thing led me to the other, because the more I saw how the left loves Islam, you know, the left hates Christianity, the left hates Judaism, the left hates Hinduism, but the left loves Islam.
What is that
it
interesting?
About yeah, well,
that's what I
want
to know.
Think about it.
Tell me, we're onto something here. This is great.
The left loves Islam because the left is fundamentally totalitarian. It's authoritarian. They want to destroy freedoms. They want to rule with absolute power and control every aspect of our lives. Now, what religion is the most tending toward authoritarianism? It's Islam. There
Islam,
has never been a republic in a majority Muslim country except Turkey that explicitly rejected political Islam. Islam has this idea of this arbitrary, angry, mean, and full of rules. And there's no love, there's no redemption, there's no forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And so you have that's the very archetype of a totalitarian, authoritarian ruler. Like Machiavelli said, it's better to be feared than to be loved. And so Allah is feared. They love that Islam lends itself to authoritarianism, that Muhammad said, obey your ruler, even if he's an Ethiopian with a head like a raisin. People always quote that to say, see, look, Muhammad was a racist. And that may well be. But I think even more important about that passage is that it's saying, do whatever the ruler says. You don't ever have the concept of individual rights, where if the ruler is a tyrant, you can overthrow him. That's not in Islam. And so you have a bunch of leftists who say, well, we can't stamp out religion. The people always will fight for religion. You can't destroy it from the human heart. But we can favor one religion and flood the West with people who believe in this religion. And it's the religion that teaches its people to accept whatever the ruler says. And here we are.
Yeah, that gets to a show I want to do in about a week or so. You know, and I've talked about this before on the show, The Great Replacement. It's not the one the left keeps saying, that white people are suddenly going to feel, you know, a horrible fear, you know, when they're surrounded by people that don't look like them. It's a bunch of nonsense. I lived in San Francisco for 30 years. Everybody was a minority. It was wonderful. We had a great time. But the whole point of the migration of Islam into, you know, it's like the Crusades, you know, have been reversed. And so from all the way up to Sweden, you've got all of Europe, you know, is mass migration of Islam. This country, too, the open border, I don't think it's any coincidence that a lot of folks are coming from Islamic countries. You know, little Somalia up in Minnesota. So is that part of this, too, is to flood our country not only with illegals, but Muslim illegals or just Muslims in general?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so. They want to dilute the Judeo-Christian character of the country. They want to replace the people with people who are more willing to accept an authoritarian government and not say, hey, we have rights, we're going to fight back, and here we go, here we are.
Yeah, I want to sort of pursue this great replacement because I'm going to get to the Civil War in a little bit. I'm sort of leading up to that. But if you look at the way the country is now, you know, abortion is for Americans. The COVID shot, which is killing people like crazy, and we reported on this, those are for Americans. Americans that believe in freedom. You know, I don't care what race, religion, or sex you are, but, you know, anybody that loves freedom, this seems to be the enemy now. And the favorite, you know, there's a reason that the illegal aliens are not getting COVID shots. You know, you would think that they'd be required crossing the border illegally, you know, would be the first thing they get is a jab in the arm. But that's not happening because they want those people around. And so there's a huge replacement, you know, of abortion and COVID jabs for Americans and poverty and rewards for anybody that is of a subservient, you know, peasant class country or something where people are used to being ruled by their government.
Yep.
Makes sense?
Because that's exactly what the idea is, yeah. Because these people are globalist, socialist, internationalists. They want a docile population that has no values other than what they give them. And so it's all working, see, in the same direction.
You know, this is such an overall scheme, and it's like the last bastions of help are those that are, you know, Jewish, Christian, and I would call Hindus and Buddhists, you know, I don't care. So, but Islam, like I said, that's where the problem is. But just the idea of resisting, we resist here on the show all the time. I've created a situation here where we have bills. And I don't know if you remember me. Do you remember meeting me in Washington at the fair conference? This is about 5 years ago. I was that guy in the back corner.
I wish I had a better memory. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, let me give you the quick synopsis here. So what we have is we have the show here at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, but we also have a citizen legislature at writeyourlaws.com. That's writeyourlaws, writeyourlaws.com. And the two big ones right now is one that puts full vaccine product liability on the vaccine makers. And the other one is eliminates big tech censorship, making them liable for touching anybody's account, anybody's posts, or arranging the search engines. Now, these are fundamental changes. But just the idea here, our mission statement, we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. That is a revolutionary statement. And I just did my first Substack article yesterday, talking about that this is our revolution, our peaceful revolution. It's fought by computers and radio shows and cell phones and personal meetings. We're all very calm and cool about this, but we are talking about a fundamental revolution where you cannot give your consent to be governed if the people themselves are not writing the laws by which they are governed. That's our revolution.
Yep. Great point. Absolutely.
Okay. Feel free to help. You spread the word. But can we use this to counter what's going on now? And with the left.
What
okay.
we need is a focus more on issues rather than candidates. And so you're working in exactly the right direction because we have so many candidates and they say all the right things and then they get elected and they betray us. And so what we need to do is start to focus on issues. Actually, ideally, we would have a country where people voted on what issues they wanted, on what programs they wanted implemented. And then various people would implement them. And if they were not implemented, then they would be removed because this is what the people voted for. And that is the kind of focus we've got to have since we keep getting betrayed by these politicians.
Yeah, this is why I've never been a fan of term limits. And I was talking to Pianki's on the line too. He's one of my most regular callers. So Pianki, feel free to join us at this point here. But this is the term limits to me, it makes no sense to have, you know, one person for 30 years or six people for 30 years. You know, if they're corrupt, they're corrupt. You're still not changing the system. So I don't see term limits as an answer. Did you mute yourself again?
Yeah, it happened again. Sorry. I remember Tom Tancredo.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I know it's crazy. But you remember Tom Tancredo, congressman from Colorado, ran for president?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
And he actually ran on term limits, and then he reneged. And he explained that you're a congressman, you're in Washington for 2 years, you really can't get anything done, and you have to stay longer to get anything done. Now, he was actually a good guy, and what he wanted done was genuine immigration reform and other things that we still very much need. And so, yeah, I agree 100%. Term limits is not the answer. What we need is our various kinds of safeguards so that it doesn't these congressional seats don't become individual sinecures for these people so that they have money flowing in from lobbyists forever.
What do you think of what do you think of the idea of taking away party membership so that people running for office and people serving in office could not belong to a political party? Party can advocate for them and spend money on them, but they can't give money directly, so that there is no hierarchy in Congress. There is no seniority. There is just individuals who are there actually representing people rather than the party, and the votes for committee chairs are secret. And you wouldn't know who is, or you probably would know for a while, but party membership would have no meaning in the center of the House.
Yeah, that sounds great. And also what we need is a prohibition on these people taking any money, any money other than their salary while they're in office, so that they can't get a book deal, they can't get huge speaking fees, all these ways that money is laundered in Washington. And politicians
paid off.
Yeah. You got to close them all off. The congressman makes $174,000 a year. That's what he's going to get. That's it.
That would do future jobs, too. So you can't serve as FDA commissioner and then go work for Pfizer, for example. Let's include that in here. We're forming a couple of bills here. I'll tell you in a minute. I want to get Pianki in line. Pianki, you had a comment or question for Robert Spencer?
The reason why you can't get nothing done 2 years is because everybody else there is not there to get something done. That's the problem.
That's right.
We got a congressperson in the 1st Congressional District of St. Louis. I know daggone well that she knew nothing about politics the day before she was elected. She got elected off of BLM and standing in front of excited people with a bullhorn.
And that would be
so she'd do two terms, and she's going to get $174,000 a year in pension. That's totally ridiculous.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's right. And another thing Tancredo told me, it backs up what you're saying, that he came into office thinking that he was going to have allies in the Republican Party to fight illegal immigration. And he pretty quickly found out that Republicans liked illegal immigration because they liked cheap labor. He was showing a film that he had made of people streaming across the border. He was showing it at the Republican caucus, and he said there were 200 congressmen there when the film started, five-minute little film clip, and at the end of 5 minutes, there were about three people left in the room.
Oh, wow. That's scary. See, now I have an answer for that, too.
They didn't want to deal with
it. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm just saying they didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to see it. They did not want to deal with the issues.
See, now we can actually deal with it at the local and state level, and this is something Pianki and I have talked about, civil asset forfeiture. And so I have a bill that I wrote for Santa Rosa County, Florida, where I am. I'm here in Milton, near Pensacola. Pianki's up in around St. Louis, Missouri, or New Orleans. I'm not sure which today. But the point is that the locals, see, everybody says that only the federal government can handle immigration. That's not true, first of all. But secondly, civil asset forfeiture. If you find illegal aliens in your town, you know, local law enforcement can seize their stuff. You can seize the companies that they work for. You know, the state can seize bank accounts. You know, credit cards, they can see, you know, seize stuff from NGOs like Catholic Charities. Anybody that's helping illegal aliens, we can handle this at the local and the state level and the county level. It's just not being done. But if you use civil asset forfeiture, which is a local state law enforcement procedure, you know, they do it for drug dealers. You know, you can do it for illegal aliens. We could solve this problem ourselves. We don't need the federal government.
Yep.
What do you think?
But it's not being done because people are profiting from it.
No,
and
that's
so
true.
As long as that's true, it's nothing going to be done.
I don't think the locals are profiting from it. Maybe big business and maybe the contributions to Congress.
Right.
The
locals are suffering it, but they don't have the power to stop.
Well, what if we start? What if we just take our county here, Santa Rosa County? And I'm actually having trouble getting this bill to our county commissioners. You would think in a conservative place like Santa Rosa, which is up in the panhandle, we're the conservative corner of Florida. You know, you would think that this would have been, you know, immediately gone through, but it's not. So there's something going on with government. The government's getting something for being of the illegals here because the people do not want illegal aliens. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
So something's,
but yeah.
Yeah.
The representatives are profiting in some way. Somebody's paying them off.
Okay. Well, let's get back to your book. I want to know how this war is going to be waged. How do you think it's going to start? And how do you think the sides are going to line up? Who, you know, tell me about it.
Well, we can hope that there's not a shooting war. It could happen that there is. But we can hope that there's not. And people on our side don't generally understand this because they say, I've had so many people say to me, if it comes to a shooting war, we got nothing to worry about because we have the guns and we have the real men, and they have a bunch of soy boys who don't believe in guns. And that's true, but they also have the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't kid ourselves that everybody in the U.S. military is going to stream out and say, I won't fight American citizens. We've seen that with police. The police have, in all too many areas, have not hesitated to act on behalf of the left, even these corrupt leaders. We've seen pro-life activists being brutalized by SWAT teams at their houses, and Roger Stone, 70-something-year-old man, getting handcuffed and taken away like he's a violent criminal. And this indicates that we do have altogether too many police officers and people on that level who are willing to do whatever they're told to do, even if they're told to do it by corrupt leftist authoritarians. And so it could be very hairy, and we can hope it doesn't come to that. What we need to do is keep up the pressure on every front and continue to challenge their lies and their distortions on every front. Now, this seems elementary to say, but this is not this is not happening. You know, we have so many people who are ostensibly on our side who play along with the left's lies and propaganda. People in Washington on our side, supposedly, Kevin McCarthy, Ted Cruz, people like that.
McCarthy's not on our side.
Who've accepted the January 6th insurrection nonsense. And this plays into the hands of the left. Anybody who does that ought to be immediately disqualified from any support from genuine patriots. Now, people like Kevin McCarthy and Ted Cruz, a lot of people know. But there's so many, and even people like Nikki Haley, who has a lot of support on the right because of her strong stand at the United Nations during the Trump administration, she signed on to the Charlottesville business, the lies about Trump saying that the Nazis were good people. And nobody like that should be given any quarter at all in terms of support from patriots.
Well, let's talk about January 6th, because this fascinates me. We think of, well, I say we, me, thinks of Mike Pence as the ultimate traitor. The fact that, in fact, I have Krista Bob coming on the show Thursday, and I want to talk to her about this too. There are 7 states worth of Trump electors out there that are still viable. We have crossed the January 20th deadline in the 22nd Amendment that says if you serve less than 2 years of a term, it doesn't count as a term. So Trump is eligible to take office today and still run in 2024. According to my reading of the 22nd Amendment. But the real danger of this is the fact that the coup was not what happened above ground. The coup is what we think is what happened underground. And there's no record of this in the congressional record. There's not a word about it. But Congress is meeting for about 7 or 8 hours under the Capitol while people were taking selfies and walking around, you know, with their statues. And Antifa and Black Lives Matter and FBI operatives were creating violence. And Ashley Babbitt got killed. There's another woman that got killed outside too. But the point is, what happened under the Capitol? I call it the talk. And the talk was, you will support the Brandon electors. You will not vote for the Trump electors. And we're going to get this business over with. And this is our peaceful transfer of power. Well, there's nothing peaceful about it. I think a lot of arms were twisted under the Capitol. Do you have any insight from the folks you talked to about what really happened under the Capitol January 6th?
I don't have that, but I do have the observation that Mike Pence, a couple days before January 6th, said, we're going to have justice on January 6th, and we're going to have the true results, and every vote will be counted, and so on. Well, what happened?
That's an interesting quote.
Turn around.
Well, what did he know? He must have known.
I'm paraphrasing. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah.
But he must have known something. It was very clear that he was saying that there would be justice for the Trump supporters on January 6th. And then when it came to January 6th, he suddenly, without any explanation, flip-flopped and said there was nothing he could do. So what did they say to him? What do they have on him? What did they get to him with? That's what I would like to know.
Yeah, see, I think about him before that. I think when he says there was justice for the Trump supporters, he was saying they're all going to be arrested and thrown in the D.C. gulag, a term that I'm glad everybody's picking up. But
well,
here's what I think.
Let me get the exact quote because I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
It'll take me a minute to find, but go ahead.
We got the rest
going,
of the hour. I'll this is great.
We're talking.
This is the first time I've ever winged an interview like this. I love it. It's fun.
Maybe this is it. Oh, it's okay. C-SPAN, though. That's not going to give me a transcript. I'm just looking around now for, here it is. I promise you, come this Wednesday, we will have our day in Congress.
We?
That's what he said.
We? Who's we?
I share the concerns of millions of Americans about voting irregularities, and I promise you, come this Wednesday, we'll have our day in Congress. Now, that sounds to me unmistakably like he's saying there were voter irregularities, and we're going to talk about them in Congress on the 6th. But he did not. He just waved them away.
This is fascinating. I read it completely differently. I read it completely the opposite. He's saying that we the power structure, we the deep state, we the allegiance to the globalists, we will have our day, and we're going to put those Trump supporters, we're going to give those Trump supporters justice.
Mm-hmm. But if that interpretation were right, why does he say I share the concerns of millions of Americans about voter irregularities? See, he's siding with the millions of Americans that have who are concerned about voter irregularities, and saying they'll have their day in Congress.
Yep, no, I think you're right. I don't see it that way, though. I still think he's been an operative. I think he made the Faustian bargain that he's going to get the Republican nomination from the deep state for 2024, and this was his price, was to keep Trump out of his second term. I think that's the bargain he made.
Interesting. Well, that may well be.
Pianki, did you have a comment?
Well, you got two things that's going on there. One, we got a law where the federal ballot should be separate from state and local candidates. Candidates for the federal government should run on a ballot that has been approved, vetted, set the requirements for people who vote for the federal candidates. Then let the states and local community have whatever the heck they want. Then the next big problem is that the federal government gets its powers from the state. State legislatures aren't doing what they should be doing. If they were, then the deal with the Trump ballots wouldn't have been going on as long as they are.
Yeah, Pianki raises two issues. We've talked about this before. Pianki's written a couple of bills for us. One of them is that he separates the ballots so that there's a federal ballot and a state ballot. And one of the big reasons is that all the illegals that are here in this country, they get their driver's license illegal, especially in places like California with motor voter. They're voting not only in the state and local elections, but the federal offices are on that same ballot. So Pianki thought, and I agree with it, if you separate the ballots, and there should be maybe two different checks or voting on different days, for state office versus federal office, we'd have a lot more secure election. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I love that. That sounds good.
Okay.
All these things need to be done all at once.
Well, we do. We got the bills. We actually write them here. I'm gonna send you a text after the show, just so you know it's me, and so we can contact and exchange emails and things like that. I don't do that over the air, but that's I'd love to get back in touch with you because there's so many ideas. I end up screaming at my TV when you're on One American News. I want to tell you this. So it's good to have you here. The second one that Pianki talks about is the power of the states, and we refer to states as actual countries. And think of them as countries. It'd be nice to be able to call ourselves the United Nations, but that's already been taken. So do you see, as we see, that one of the big problems is that the states themselves have completely abrogated their authority? They, the states should have decertified Brandon, especially Arizona, January 21st. Back in December of 2020. So what aren't the states doing that they should be doing?
Well, this is what the United States was, or were. Really, it was the United Nations. That's what the founders meant by states, and that's very clearly what kind of federal government they envisioned. And unfortunately, there's been this tendency towards centralization for so long now that the states have lost a sense of their own identity. But you go back to the Civil War, and you have somebody like Robert E. Lee, who's been, of course, completely demonized nowadays. He was actually not pro-slavery, and he actually said that if he could keep the Union together, he would free every slave if it would do it. But when Virginia seceded, he said he had to be loyal to Virginia and fight for Virginia. He thought of Virginia as his country, and that's why he went on the other side. And there were lots of people in the Union as well who didn't think they were fighting for the United States. They thought they were fighting for Ohio or Pennsylvania or whatever. And this has been completely lost, actually because of, in part, the way the Civil War turned out, there was a tremendous overemphasis on federalism after it, and a de-emphasis on the rights of the states, because the rights of the states was considered to be one of the primary sources of the problem.
Fascinating. Whereas I think it's a solution. Was there ever a time when there were maybe not actual state certification or state citizenship, but people really did think, were there any kind of like rituals or titles or anything that you were, first of all, a citizen of your state and then a citizen of the nation? Whereas now it's like U.S. citizenship, you know, and then according to the 14th Amendment, we're also a citizen of the state and where we reside. Was it ever, you know, tell me more about this. This is the first time I'm hearing of this, how strong the state citizenship
was. Yeah, before the Civil War, that was pretty much taken for granted all over the country.
Interesting.
That you were a citizen of the state and secondarily a citizen of the United States. The first loyalty was to the states, and the United States was considered to be a compact between mm-hmm. individual states. Now, this is the idea that led to the secession and the Civil War, because, of course, the southern states, acting upon this idea, said, well, we're leaving this particular compact. It would be like Britain in Brexit, leaving the European Union. And then in losing the war, this is actually a constitutional question that has never been settled. It was settled by the force of arms. And so there's a de facto settlement, but there's never been any actual clear explanation in the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution about secession, about whether a state can actually lawfully leave the United States. Now, it would seem that
it wouldn't be in the Constitution.
Civil War, that there isn't, but yeah, well,
But it wouldn't be because
but in any case,
well, I was just thinking the Constitution is written by the states. The states ratified the Constitution to limit the federal government. So why would the states put something into the Constitution, a right that they, of course, thought they had, being independent, you know, nations? And when you think of states, you think of like, you know, like Athens, a city-state. You know, so if these states consider themselves independent nations, why would they think to give to even have the question of the federal government, you know, having any power over them to secede or not secede? That wouldn't be something they think about. Does that make sense?
Well, maybe not. But I mean, I suppose it depends on what kind of thing they thought they were getting into. And these are questions that have been argued for two centuries now. Because is it like a marriage, you know? And when you enter into a Christian marriage, at very least, you don't have an idea of how it's going to break up. But a lot of modern-day non-Christian marriages, the people sign a prenuptial agreement where they divide up how they're going to separate their assets once they divorce. And it's kind of taken for granted that it's going to be a temporary thing. And so that might be a poison. Some people would argue that that's a poison pill. You can't put that really legitimately into a marriage. You're dooming it to destruction. And you could say the same thing about the Constitution, that they didn't have a clause saying, if you want to leave, you can leave, because then people were going to leave.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, so they could have said that there shall be no restriction. The federal government shall not have the power to restrict states from seceding from the, you know, from the United States.
Yeah,
if a state wishes to
leave this compact, then they can leave. We're getting to the real heart of the paradox. Abraham Lincoln said in Gettysburg that they were fighting so that government of the people, by the people, and for the people would not perish from the earth. And the southern states could very easily have responded, well, where's our right to government of the people, by the people, and for the people? We wanted to have this other kind of government, and you were violently preventing us from doing so. But Lincoln could then respond that the minority has to stay in the compact, or you don't really have representative government at all, and it's going to atomize into anarchy. And so this is the difficulty, that the minority has to remain loyal. The mm-hmm. problem we have now in the United States, however, is that the majority, or at least the group with all the power, wants to coerce the minority and destroy its character and destroy it as such and incorporate it into the majority. And so what is the minority going to do now? It has to assert itself, or it will lose its identity altogether.
No, I agree with you. It's like we're still fighting the Civil War, but instead of on a political, yeah, on a national level, we're actually fighting on an ideological level, which is my next question. But that's the whole difference between a Republican and a democracy. See, I don't use the word democracy on the show. I also don't use words like President, yeah, Biden or Biden administration, because that's not proven to be true yet. In fact, just the opposite. So if you think of us as a republic, and Article 4, Section 4 says very clearly that the states, the federal government shall guarantee to these states as part of their contract a republican form of government. Therefore, democracy can't exist legally in the United States. The majority can't outvote the individual rights of the individual, the smallest minority there is. The individual still has rights that preclude the majority from ever affecting them, simply because that's the definition of a republic, based on individual rights, a limited government, a constitution specifically restricting federal governments and state governments. So this is a reversal of everything that we hold true and sacred, is what the left is doing. But maybe I'm repeating,
yeah,
myself. Okay.
No, that's why
tell
they
me.
Call it our democracy. They're always, yeah, saying that because they hate the republic and they want to destroy the republic. They don't believe in a republic. And so they want to confuse people, and all these miseducated young people are easily, mm-hmm, confused into thinking that we have a straight democracy where it's just essentially mob rule and they're the mob.
You know, it's fascinating. We talk about all the time on this show, assumptions are stronger than truth. Some of the big ones that the Supreme Court can interpret the Constitution. That's a bunch of nonsense, you know, that they can make policy and law. How does the Supreme Court fit into this, into our potential civil war that the left wants to wage here? Are they going to use the court? Even worse
oh, they
than
very
using
much
it now?
Want to use the court. The court, okay, is an obstacle to them right now because it has a conservative majority. And that's why we hear them talking about packing the court, about adding justices, about putting a retirement age in, because they want to get these guys out. And the court then would destroy our freedoms altogether. This is what the left wants to do. That right now we can say, well, you know, they can't destroy the freedom of speech. They can't destroy the right to bear arms. They can't destroy our other freedoms, because the Supreme Court will stop them. But once the Supreme Court is in their corner, then some free speech case comes up and they rule, oh, hate speech is not free speech. You know, hate speech is this concept they made up to, mm-hmm, demonize and stigmatize and silence speech that they don't like. And so the leftist court rules that the hate speech has no First Amendment protection, and then they can forbid speech all they want, and we can't do anything about it.
Hmm.
Well,
Pinky, your point, then I'm going to get back to Robert's book. Yeah.
The states, and that's a simple solution for that. You need to have one or two states just nullify it and tell the Supreme Court we ain't going to do it.
There you go
local,
again.
We're not going to do it.
Well, in 1830, South, mm-hmm, Carolina nullified a law that Andrew Jackson administration had passed. And Jackson actually threatened to send troops to South Carolina if they did not back down. And South Carolina backed down.
That's
but here again, we have a question that was settled by might makes right, by the strength of the federal military, rather, mm-hmm, than by an actual consideration of the legal issues and constitutional issues involved. And so can a state nullify a federal law? Well, now they're doing it de facto all over the place, you know, and the federal government doesn't say a thing. When you have immigration laws and the states say, no, this is a sanctuary city or sanctuary state or whatever. And, mm-hmm, the federal government, because they all are made, it's all made up of people that agree with them, they do nothing. And so functionally we have nullification, but only for the left.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You had in Illinois with Pritchett on the gun ban, and sheriff said, we're not going to enforce that law. That right
well,
there on the lower scale is a nullification. But the federal government gets its power from the states. Federal government,
yep,
has no policing powers. What are they going to tell you? We're not going to give you your share of revenue? Well, the states can say, well, we're not going to give you money where you can hold our share of the revenue. I mean, states got the power, but they don't use it.
There you go.
Yeah. Let's get back to your book here. I want to make sure that I've covered everything because honestly, I haven't had a chance to review it because I didn't expect you this morning. So anything we should be covering? Let's get contact information where people can buy your book and find out more stuff. Like I say, I'll be contacting you after the show because I want to continue more. This is fascinating. So what have we not covered that we should be covering?
Well, the book is called The Sumter Gambit, How the Left is Trying to Foment a Civil War. It's available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever there are books sold, or should be available anyway. And it is an overview of what the left is really trying to do altogether. Most of the time on the right, we are focused on particular issues, mm-hmm. Particular symptoms of the larger problem. But the book is about what the larger problem is, what the real illness is that we face in the Republic today, and what we can do about it. And so that's really the idea. It's a lot worse than most people think, but at the same time, there are people who are awakening to the threat all over the country, and there are a lot of reasons for hope.
Well, tell me about those. Where's the best resistance, and what can I learn from that for my own show here and our citizen legislature?
Grassroots people on the local level who are mm-hmm. dealing with, for one thing, the cultural revolution on a local level with their own children. When they send their children to the local public school and there's some drag queen there doing pornographic dancing and so on. And mm-hmm. we've had parents go to the school board meetings and protest and say they don't want this LGBTQ literature pushed on their children in the public schools. And they don't want drag queens in the classrooms and so on. And, of course, the Biden administration being the Biden regime, if you prefer, being an authoritarian, anti-American entity, yeah. they actually started terror investigations in the FBI against these parents. But the parents have not given up, and that's all to their credit, because we cannot allow ourselves to be intimidated, and we have to stand up and have some courage in mm-hmm. regard to these kinds of responses from the feds, because they're going to keep trying to do this and to frighten us into submission. But it's a very great sign of hope that we have parents who are standing up, who are not allowing this to be done unchallenged.
Well, let me ask you a bigger question then. When COVID broke out and they closed the schools, I said, great, leave them closed, sell the buildings, fire all the teachers, completely destroy the public education system, and let's rebuild a new one based on private education, on school choice, on vouchers from all the money that's collected for education. We could have done that. Of course, everybody thought I was crazy. It's like, no. And of course, now that the schools are back doing what they did before, people are like, oh, that was a good idea. So can we have a free society if government educates children? That's a big question.
No, okay. Absolutely. And so parents need to take their children out of these schools, everywhere possible, and start our own alternative schools or homeschool. But the idea that this government, with its radical leftist communist amoral agenda, is going to treat our children properly, well, that's fantasy.
Yeah. How do you make a leftist? How do you turn a perfectly normal, healthy baby into a leftist? What's the procedure? Is it parental, family, environment, media, everything? How do you make a leftist?
Yeah, it's really everything. It's really hard. There's no doubt that there are parents who've had the best of intentions, who are good Christians, who are patriotic Americans, and they've seen their children taken by this, because it's everywhere. You know, you mm-hmm. can... I don't mean to be completely depressing, but you can take your children out of the schools. You can do everything that I was just recommending, and mm-hmm. the culture can still get you. You know, even if your kid has a phone, who knows what he's looking at, and you can take the phone away except when he needs it so you can contact him somewhere or something like that, mm-hmm. and it can still get through and be a corrupting influence. The culture is all pervasive, and so we have to do the best that we can. But the way that children are corrupted in this regard is that they get it in the schools, they get it in entertainment, they get it in the movies that they watch and the TV shows, everywhere.
You know, it's interesting that Hollywood is big on talking about the underdog, you know, against the oppressive government, the Hunger Games. You know, my favorite film, V for Vendetta. All these, in fact, V for Vendetta pretty much explained the whole COVID epidemic, you know, about 8 years before it came out. So the evidence, but yet Hollywood supports the establishment. This supports the regime, supports the status quo and the authoritarian government. It's an interesting contradiction.
Yeah. When they make films like that, they think that they are talking about evil Trump and his evil supporters. They think that's the authoritarian threat. I mean, there are people who actually believe that Trump is a threat to, quote, our democracy, you know, and that there was an insurrection against our democracy on January 6th. And there are people mm-hmm. who really actually seriously believe this because they've been so thoroughly indoctrinated.
Well, how about I remember I've talked about mass psychosis before, and the three ways you combat mass psychosis: truth, ridicule, and parallel structures. Action Radio is a parallel structure. We're a parallel legislature of citizens writing the bills that Congress can't, particularly vaccine product liability. I've got another bill that you're going to love that's a total disarmament of 287,000 federal bureaucrats because the Constitution doesn't have a provision for arming bureaucrats, only the military. You know, so that's the kind of thing. So we come up with the bills that they can't write. So that's our parallel structure. Truth is what we try and talk about here, and you and I and everybody else tries to get truth. But the one that I think we need to do more of is ridicule. Make fun of these people. People, ever since Brandon, the word Brandon came out, I think the power of ridicule is underestimated in our fight against the left. We just need to make more fun of them.
You know, yeah, you're right. With a mask. I wish I were a funny guy because I would be doing it. But I completely agree
that was
with
funny.
You. Well, that's good. I appreciate that. But I completely agree with you in principle that mm-hmm. That ridicule is a powerful force. You know who said that is Saul Alinsky. And the left uses it a lot. But we don't fight back. And I do as much as I can, mm-hmm. but I'm not that funny a guy, like I said. And we need people
Try some stand-up comedy.
Really are who can do this.
Well, I'm debating to playing something for you because I did a bunch of sarcastic political pieces during the lockdown because I was bored and nothing was open. We've got about 3 minutes left. Do you have maybe 4 minutes so I can play you a two-minute thing and then we can talk for 2 minutes?
Okay, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Hello, America. Looks like millions of you are in states where the governor dictator has said that food is essential, but God is not. Fortunately, we have a solution for you. We've combined your essential food shopping with a non-essential religious experience. Being in the same building and being completely intertwined, you can't do one without the other. Welcome to the New Normal Church and Grocery Store. Yes, the New Normal Church and Grocery Store is the first business of its kind to bring God conveniently into your food shopping aisle. Think of this as food for your body and food for your soul. No social distance or group size restrictions here. Upon entering the New Normal Church and Grocery Store, you will pick up your shopping cart. You can then choose from an optional mask with a Star of David, a cross, a crescent moon, a sun for you Shintos, a statue of Buddha, and for you agnostics, a question mark. Headsets are available to play sermons throughout your shopping experience. Some of the favorites include, I'm Going to Heaven and You're Not, Die Infidel Die, Oi, What Not to Say During the Bris, and That Butterfly May Be Your Grandfather. To orient you to the store, the Kosher Jewish Deli is by the Western Wall. A simple shalom gets you service, but be prepared to haggle. For you Muslims, out of courtesy, we put the halal butcher by the Eastern Wall. Sharia store policies require the wearing of both a burqa and a mask, just to be safe. Protestants will find the Wonder Bread, hot dogs, and steak in the central aisles, where all the best-dressed customers can also be found. When you notice the smell of incense, you are nearing the Buddhist section, which is all vegetarian. For Catholics, communion is available in the bakery department by the wafers near the red wine section. Agnostics should go directly to customer service because you folks have no idea what you want anyway. Be sure to offer your confessional to the checker on the way out if you so choose. Please don't forget to first pull down the blind on the plexiglass screen. And if you require ministering, you can talk to your bagger as they push your groceries to your car because all our baggers are cross-trained in theology. The New Normal Church and Grocery Store, your combination alternative to the separation of church by the state. That's my answer. What do you think?
Nice. Very nice. Very clever. It's a target-rich environment when you're talking about the whole COVID madness. And so I commend you, sir.
Well, thank you. I just think that more ridicule is better. So any other ways we can fight back?
All
you know, we're allowed a little overtime here on Block Talk, so I got a few minutes if you have some. But what anything else we could be doing or should be doing or you know, to prevent this war. I don't want, that's why I started Action Radio, because I figured, you know, if people think it's only, you know, ballots or bullets, you know, bills, this is my alternative. So I'm right there with you that we need to start talking.
No, every last which way we have to fight back. We have to fight back wherever we are in any way possible, in any situation where it comes up. We have to all become activists. There is no more room for people to think, well, somebody else is going to handle this for me. Nobody's going to do it for us. If we're going to save freedom, every last American has to be out there fighting. These are the times to try men's souls once again. And so those who are willing to stand up, the more of them, the better. And because human beings are an imitative species, that will lead to more standing up. And the more resistance that they encounter, the less likely they are to succeed.
Interesting. Is it like a guidebook, like a resistance guidebook, or where do people go? Are there resources? Let's talk about Jihad Watch and the information that you provide all the time too. So where can people find out how to be better resistors?
Well, that really comes up in each individual situation. Like, I have a guy who sends me articles about the Council on American Islamic Relations that he writes. He watches. He has some sort of a subscription to establishment media news outlets. I don't know how he does it, but he finds whenever CARE is on TV and writes about it and I put it up at Jihad Watch. The idea is to show this is the kind of propaganda you're getting on the news, and this is how you should be alert to how you're being deceived and manipulated. And he's just some guy who does this in his spare time. This is the kind of thing that I mean, that whatever resources you have, whatever access you have, whatever kind of influence you have, whatever time you have, you need to start thinking, how can I defend freedom today? Because nobody else is going to be doing it. And so Jihad Watch is a news site I started actually 20 years ago to report on jihad activity. Now we also report on the left's encroachments on our freedoms, and it's all there at jihadwatch.org.
Do you have a Substack article that you also write, or anything else you do?
I don't have a Substack. I hope to start one eventually, but there's so many things to do, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, listen, I'm starting a new, completely new style of broadcasting. This is Action Radio, which I hope will replace talk radio as talk show hosts become Action Radio hosts and actually work with their audiences, you know, sponsoring legislation. That's my goal.
Yes.
You said something
good.
One more. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
No, that's all. I was just saying good. That's a great idea. That's a great thing to be doing. I hope more will follow you.
I hope so, too. Well, I've got an idea for you. If you want to write a bill, you said something really fascinating earlier. This is the last point I want to let you go here. I don't want to keep you too long, even though we have overtime. Issues-based elections, you said that. Would you be interested in actually drafting a bill on that? Can we explore that further?
Yeah, I don't know how to draft a bill, but we can talk about that.
Well, I can say that. Just go to writeyourlaws.com. So there's our website, writeyourlaws.com. And with WRITE, and you can email me greg@writeyourlaws.com, and it tells you how to write a bill. There's three parts to a bill for citizen legislation. You have an introduction, you know why you're doing it. You post the old law, if there's an old law that you're changing, and you post the new law, the amended parts to the law, or if you're coming up with a completely new law, then we do that. So we'd have to find the federal election codes, and we'd have to go find where we would put an issues-based election. That's how we do it.
Yes.
Easy
well,
peasy.
Okay, I'm all for it, yeah. I mean, just imagine if you went into the voting booth and instead of voting for this guy or that guy, you vote for pro-life, you vote for a flat tax or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the people who are actually in the offices are bound to follow what the people voted for.
Yeah. What if we do it on the midterm years that we have an issues-based election? You know, 100 issues, you know, vote for them or just pick five of the most important. And that determines what Congress does. And then, of course, you have an election 2 years later for a president and a new Congress. I think we're onto something here. I think you've got a brilliant idea. I think we just need to explore it more.
Fantastic. Let's do it.
Okay. I'm done. Pianki, do you have a last question or something? Because then we have to let Robert go.
Yeah. Sorry. You're asking the gentleman there. Yes.
My colleague. Yeah.
No. Tell him is good luck. We'll meet again.
Thank you very much.
And look at Jihad
Absolutely.
Watch. Sir, thank you so much for calling and waiting on hold because, and like I say, I think we made the best of the fact that you know, I didn't know you were calling. And now that I have, you know, got your number, I'll recognize it next time I put it in the log. Thank you, Robert
Worked
Spencer.
Out great. Thank you very much.
You take care. Later. All right. Bye now. This has been way too much fun today. I had no idea. So you're talking about, I literally did wing that interview. I had, you know, I mean, I've known, well, not completely, because I do read Jihad Watch. I do know of Robert Spencer. We did meet 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago now. Yes, 6 years, five and a half. And so I am familiar with his work. So, but this is a nice thing about having the issues at your disposal. You're able to do this kind of stuff. I haven't played any of my normal announcements or things like that. I'm going to do that now. So let me announce that our regular site, the one you're listening to, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website I just mentioned, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws.com. And our contribution site, givesendgo.com/actionradio. givesendgo.com/actionradio. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. And Bill Fecky's off for a little while. So I might find another person to take over that spot. But back at 7 a.m. So I've got a few announcements to play, a musical selection, and I will see you all tomorrow. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.